Hi, this is Doug Basham reminding you to join me weeknights at 7 here on KRXA. That's Basham Radio weeknights 7 to 10 p.m. right here on AM 540 KRXA.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Do students have a right to choose where they can go to school, or must school districts make that decision based on skin color, telling some students where they must go because of their color? The Supreme Court is hearing the arguments.
Mostly pro-affirmative action demonstrators noisily supported school districts that want to use racial student assignment factors to maintain diversity. Inside the court, Justice Stephen Breyer argued,
there's a terrible problem in the country. There are lots and lots of school districts that are becoming more and more segregated.
Harry Carell is a lawyer for Seattle parents angry that skin color was used to deny their kids admission to high schools they wanted.
The government can't be in the position of deciding what the right racial mix is.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News. Washington.
I'm Heather Bosch in Seattle, where some say if racial tiebreakers make schools more diverse, then it's okay with them.
No, I don't see why it'd be a problem.
Yeah, that's okay.
I think it's fine, too. I don't think nothing wrong with it.
But others object to it.
Should be no color line. It shouldn't matter what color you are.
I don't really think race should have anything to do with it.
Shouldn't be a factor.
Not at all.
Heather Bosch for CBS News, Seattle.
A jury in Houston, Texas takes up the issue on Wednesday whether to order the execution of a man responsible for the deaths of 19 people. Tyrone Williams abandoned a locked tractor trailer full of 70 to 100 illegal immigrants in the hot Texas sun, May of 2003. Craig Washington is his defense lawyer.
Mitigation can be anything. Mitigation is any reason that argues against death. Any reason that argues against death.
Not yet corralled, but the wildfire situation in Ventura County, California, is a whole lot better today, mostly because it isn't quite so windy.
We have some flare-ups in certain areas. When we get some embers blown into some heavy vegetation. But right now, things are kind of not as bad as they were yesterday.
Fred Ponce at the County Fire Department. President Bush will be nominating someone new to be ambassador to the UN. John Bolton says when his term expires in January, he's done.
You've been strong in your advocacy for human rights and human dignity. You've done everything that can be expected for an ambassador. And I accept your letter.
President Bush and the leading Shiite political party leader from Iraq thanked each other at the White House today for the hard work and sacrifice toward building a new nation. And Abdul Aziz al-Hakim, through an interpreter, said Iraqis must chart their own course.
We reject any attempts to have a regional or international role in solving the Iraqi issue. We cannot bypass the political process. Iraq should be in a position to solve Iraqi problems.
In Maine, there's a battle over a beer brew called Santa's Butt Winter Porter, because the label celebrates Santa's retreating image, which Maine officials say is undignified and improper. The distributor from Belchertown, Massachusetts, says they don't see the problem. The Dow today up about 89 points. The Nasdaq gained about 35 on Wall Street. This is CBS News.
Tiger Balm presents football superstar Jerry Rice.
Foxtrot. I can't believe I'm dancing with Jerry Rice.
I can't believe dancing is as hard as playing wide receiver.
Tango.
I'm sorry.
You okay?
Yeah. How do you manage all the aches and pain?
Tiger Balm.
Really?
Tiger Balm works fast and lasts a long time.
Samba.
Whoa. Oh, sorry. I'm such a klutz.
Maybe we should stop.
No, just get me some Tiger Balm.
You sure?
Just get me the Tiger Balm.
If you suffer from aches and pains, go for the balm. Tiger Balm. Now in a convenient, easy-to-apply patch. At drugstores, mass discount stores, supermarkets, and health food stores everywhere.
Because financial solutions have no borders or boundaries, because one market affects another market, UBS operates in only two locations, everywhere and right next to you. Powerful global resources leveraged every day to the most important issues. Yours. UBS, leader in wealth management, global asset management, and investment banking, and committed to a relationship we call you and us. Member SIPC.
The search for a missing California family is expanding along the Oregon coastline.
The San Francisco family of James Kim, his wife and two young daughters, disappeared after visiting a restaurant in Roseburg, Oregon, November 25th, en route to a beach area.
Well, we understand the clock's ticking, but no one's about to give up at this point in time.
Lieutenant Greg Hastings with the Oregon State Police says authorities are searching a huge area that is heavily wooded with narrow winding roads characterized by steep drop-offs.
You've got a few hundred square miles of they're trying to look over with no known confirmed route that they would have taken, which would make this easier.
Stephen Kaufman, CBS News.
The number of victims of E. coli poisoning in central New Jersey has risen to at least 24, and there are unconfirmed reports of more on Long Island, New York. Thus far, the common denominator among victims seems to be Taco Bell restaurants. Though there's no confirmation that tainted meat's been found in any of them yet, the chain has voluntarily closed several stores as the investigators look for the source. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Merry Christmas!
To many in your local community, this is the sound of Christmas. Together, Walmart and the Salvation Army's Red Kettle campaign have been helping change the lives of those in your community for 20 years. And this year, our commitment is stronger than ever. From our families to yours, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Okay, Mr. Cold is out there, and he's coming. What can you do? Get Dual Action Healthy Relief Cold Reduce Lozenges now. Why? Because they're dual action. They relieve your cold symptoms and are formulated to reduce the duration of your cold by days. So when Mr. Cold comes knocking, you can escort him out fast. Homeopathic Healthy Relief Cold Reduce Lozenges. A better way to feel your best, fast. Also in flu formula at retailers everywhere. Read and follow label warnings and directions.
Peter B. Collins.
Welcome to another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, live, unscripted, unrehearsed, from the left coast. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. Delighted to be with you again today. We've got lots to talk about. First up, as we do every Monday, we'll rate the media's performance over the past week. Paul Waldman from Media Matters joins us in a moment. Also on today's program, about a half hour away, we'll talk with Dean John Britton at the Thurgood Marshall School of Law at Texas Southern University about the oral arguments before the Supreme Court today about desegregation efforts. As Michael Richards has proven, we've fixed all the race problems in this country. Next hour, David McMichael, who used to work at the Central Intelligence Agency, will give us his views of Robert Gates' fitness to serve as defense secretary, and we'll talk about the hearings scheduled to start tomorrow. John Warner wants to wrap them up tomorrow. I think there's a little more to examine here, Senator. And we'll also talk about the Monday Christmas bonus. John Bolton has resigned, and we can say bye-bye, well, at least for now. Also on today's program, a report on the amazing swearing-in ceremony in Mexico City on Friday. It took 4 minutes, and it, of course, was over the protestations of many members of the legislature there. Robert Collier from the San Francisco Chronicle will report for us. And lots of action, too, in our free speech zone today. We'll talk about the price you pay when you lose your cell phone. And some other important issues, too. I want to take a moment here at the top of the show to thank the fine people at the United Nations Association of Monterrey. I was their speaker on Saturday, and it was a great crowd, a lot of interesting people. I enjoyed meeting each and every one of you. And I thank you for your attentiveness to my remarks. That was before I lost my cell phone. And in particular, I want to thank Larry Levine and Loretta Fisher and her husband, Glenn, for putting on an excellent event. I really enjoyed it. And as promised, we kick off our show today with our representative from MediaMatters.org. That's Media Matters for America. And today, Paul Waldman joins us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. He is our media man. Yeah, I said that. Hello, Paul. How you doing?
Good, Peter. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. It's been quite an interesting week, and, well, we have rarely a dull moment now in this transition of power
and some of the various changes of the guard that are occurring. I referenced John Bolton's resignation, and that appears to be the president accepting the reality that the Senate simply would not confirm him for the rest of the president's term. And for me, well, that's good news. But I wanted to talk with you first up about the kind of more muscular coverage that we are seeing on corporate television. NBC announced last week via Matt Lauer on the Today Show that they see a civil war in Iraq, and that's what they're going to call it. And I think they're a little late to the game, delayed by the politics of the Bush administration and the intimidation offered. But I welcome them because it's a term we've been using consciously for several months now.
Yeah, and you know the administration is still denying that there's a civil war. I'd like to see someone ask them what definition of a civil war you could come up with that Iraq couldn't apply to, that you couldn't apply to Iraq. But, you know, the interesting thing about this, I think, was the reaction. You saw all these conservatives and people on Fox News and other places coming out and saying, oh, this is just terrible that NBC is doing this. They're just showing that they're not on America's side. They won't stand up. You know, they're just trying to inject, put their own politics into this. And the fact of the matter is that it's not as though deciding to call it a civil war is the only decision. When you decide not to call it a civil war, you're making a decision, too. That happens to be the position and the nomenclature that supports the Bush administration. They don't want people to think that it's a civil war. So when you decide that you're not going to use that term, you're making a political decision, too. You're deciding you're going to support the administration's interpretation of the, of what's going on, despite all of the facts on the ground and everything that we've come to over the last few years and all the horrific violence that we're seeing. That's a political decision, too. But I think that the way that the discussion has been going, you would think that the only political decision was if you made the decision to call it what it is.
That's a very important statement. Thanks for making that. I had not really, you know, viewed it that way. I thought of NBC as breaking from the pack, and that's a good point. But you are correct that those who decline to really address reality and convey that to us in the news are making a conscious political decision as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the words we use are important. One of the things we've noticed in recent days is that that Republicans tend to spend a lot more time thinking about language than Democrats do. You'll notice it in the terms that they use. You know, they never say tax cuts. They say tax relief. You know, they like to pick out little phrases that they can repeat over and over, like cut and run. And they've spent a lot of time thinking about how language can shape the debate and shape the way we think about these issues. It may not be enough to sort of wipe everyone's mind clean and make everyone believe what they want us to believe, but it's an effective tool of argumentation. And one of the things that they've done in that effort is to politicize the whole arena of language so that reporters become kind of hyper-conscious of it. And if they're not using the terms that the administration is using, they know they're going to be attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what we want journalists to do is to make an independent judgment. And as I said, any definition of a civil war you could possibly come up with would be applied to Iraq, except for the fact that the people involved don't seem to be wearing blue and gray uniforms. That's about it. But if you can't look at the situation and make that judgment, then, you know, whether it's out of just not thinking about it enough or out of a real fear of what kinds of attacks that are going to be made against you, then you're not doing your job as a journalist.
Yeah. Now, before we went on the air, we chatted briefly, and you told me you didn't get to watch Meet the Press yesterday, and that's okay. I usually don't see it myself, but I caught the replay on cable in the evening. And I noticed a real difference in Tim Russert's posture. He was interviewing Stephen Hadley, and he really worked him over pretty hard about the Hadley memo that was leaked just before the meetings in Jordan last week between Bush and Maliki. And Hadley was spinning furiously and feverishly, and Russert was much harder edged, interrupting him, asking him tough questions about, you know, should the president start off with an apology? And he went into some detail about his script for the president's apology, about all the errors that have been made. So I am noticing a change in tone, and apparently the corporate media now feels it's safe to attack this administration.
Well, I think that always happens to a degree when their poll numbers fall to a certain level. But, you know, this is a situation that's really tailor-made for Tim Russert, because what he likes to do to almost anyone, no matter which party you come from, is to find what you're saying today and then see if you can find some statement that you made that contradicted that, whether it was a day ago, a week ago, a month ago, or a year ago, and confront you with that hypocrisy and say, aha,
yeah, right.
You're saying something different today than you were then. And, of course, here you have Stephen Hadley, who the New York Times reported this leaked memo where he talks about how they basically have no confidence in Prime Minister Maliki, and yet that is in contradiction to the public line that Hadley and Bush and everyone else have in the administration have been taking for a while now. So that sort of puts him right in Tim Russert's trap.
Well, and you got Russert nailed, because that's exactly what he did. He pulled out some comments that were talking about Maliki 2 weeks ago from the Hadley memo, then talked about the comments made by the president and Hadley after their meeting with Maliki, and said, gosh, in 2 weeks he's become the right guy for Iraq?
Yeah, and you know, in terms of Russert, that is sometimes a very effective tool in asking what can be really important questions, and sometimes it's just a gimmick. You know, sometimes that's the right question to ask, and sometimes that's just a distraction from the right question to ask. This time it may be a little bit of both.
We're talking with Paul Waldman from Media Matters for America. And Paul, you and I may have a slightly different take on this, but I got overdosed on the Pope last week. And I've been to Istanbul and other parts of Turkey, and I kind of enjoyed the travelogue part of it. But when Anderson Cooper went into his fourth segment on it, on the same night that I wanted to hear news about Maliki snubbing Bush and the king over dinner in Amman, they stayed with the Pope story. And I didn't think there was much news there. There's pageantry. There's the, you know, kind of historic meeting of faith leaders. There's the recent, bad flavor left by the Pope because of a speech he gave in Germany. But still, it didn't add up to me that the coverage was warranted by the news that was actually generated there.
Well, I think you may be right that the Pope is probably trying not to make so much news these days. And his trip to Turkey was perhaps notable for what didn't happen. You know, there could have been bloodshed in the streets and riots and who knows what else, of people protesting his arrival. But it seemed fairly restrained. Under ordinary circumstances, the news's reaction to that, particularly cable news, is to look away and look for something that has a little more conflict in it. After all, people talk about the bias in the news. The greatest bias that the news has is toward conflict. They want fireworks. They want antagonists. And it may be a little bit surprising that at least one cable news station decided to go with All Pope All the Time when there wasn't all that much of a conflict there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're right, and it was notable for what he didn't do. He didn't insult the Muslims, and he actually sent some signals. He supports Turkey's entry into the EU, which is different from his position only a year ago. So, I think it warranted coverage. It just seemed to me that once CNN committed the troops to Istanbul, they were going to get their money back by offering extensive coverage, whether the story earned it or not. We're going to take a break and return with Paul Waldman from Media Matters for America. They're on the web, mediamatters.org. And if you'd like to join us with a comment or a question, do it now. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. 888-573-8372. Here at the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
The Monterey Peninsula College Holiday Jewelry Sale is here, starting Tuesday, December 5th through the 7th. It's your chance to buy gorgeous, one-of-a-kind silver and metal jewelry pieces, plus fabulous metal art, also handmade ceramics, over 20 of our most talented artists, with affordable, delicious jewelry. This sale is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, December 5th, 6th, and 7th. Open all day till 7 p.m. at Monterey Peninsula College, 980 Fremont in Monterey. Follow the signs for parking. Don't miss it.
Don't your children deserve the very best for the holidays? Locally owned and operated for 36 years, Thinker Toys has been the first holiday shopping stop for generations of parents in Carmel and Monterey, where owner Mark Phillips and his staff take great pride in personally serving every customer. Thinker Toys is dedicated to the proposition that fun, learning, and personal growth go together perfectly. While Thinker Toys specializes in educational toys for newborns through six-year-olds, there's no better place than Thinker Toys to buy great toys for thinking kids of all ages. Make your child's Christmas, Hanukkah, Chrismica, Kwanzaa, or the holiday of your choice extra special with high-quality educational toys and games from Thinker Toys. Open every day at 10 a.m. in Carmel at 7th and San Carlos and in Monterey at the Del Monte Center. Drop by Thinker Toys today and tell Mark that Peter B. sent you. Happy holidays from Thinker Toys.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
For whatever legal advice you need, go to Lawyers on Duty. Whether it's for your estate planning, divorce, custody, probate, or a living trust, Lawyers on Duty has experienced attorneys with realistic fees. There's no need to go anywhere else. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available, knowledgeable, and affordable. Located in the courtyard behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, Monterey. Lawyers on Duty open every weekday 9 to 5. Call Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner. And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. It's 22 minutes past the hour. We continue with Paul Waldman from Media Matters for America. Their powerful website's available to you for free. It's mediamatters.org. And on the website, I see there's some jobs available at Media Matters, Paul. We've got some pretty interesting activist types who listen to this program. What kind of opportunities do you have there? Paul, do I have you?
Sorry, I haven't looked at our jobs page recently, I have to say. But, but people can come to our website, and I believe it's under the About Us. There's a link for jobs, and
yeah.
You can go there and see that we have jobs in our communication department, jobs for researchers. And if people are in the Washington, D.C. area and they'd like to submit us an application, we'd be more than happy to look at you.
Now, I understand there's an office in Colorado now. Do you have any other branches around the country?
Well, we hope that we will. We started the Colorado Media Matters, and it's been tremendously successful. It's basically a small version of Media Matters focused on the state media and not the national media, so Colorado newspapers, Colorado television, and it's been terrific. They've had they've gotten a lot of attention, and they're doing a terrific job of keeping the Colorado media honest. And if it continues to be successful, we hope we'll get the opportunity to start more state chapters.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry I surprised you with that.
Okay.
I meant to ask JMO about it last week because I saw it there on the website, and I can just imagine that there might be some candidates listening to our program.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
So let's next talk about Wolf Blitzer on CNN. He had the Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez on the program, and he kind of let him off easy.
Yeah, well, you know, this is always a question for someone doing an interview. When an administration official says something to you that's pretty laughable, what is your responsibility? How hard should you press him? And in this case, he didn't really press him at all. You know, the occasion was a settlement that the Justice Department made for $2 million for this man named Brandon Mayfield, who was this lawyer in Oregon,
right,
who they arrested wrongfully and held for a while. And Blitzer asked him about some of the other people who were detained wrongfully, and some of them have had apologies issued to them. Many of them haven't. And Gonzalez kind of played dumb, as though he had no idea that any of this was going on, and couldn't comment on any of it because he didn't know any specifics.
And this is the man who, as White House counsel, was in charge of coordinating the efforts at detention, the whole interrogation program, the departure from the Geneva Conventions. I just studied this for a speech I gave last weekend. And Gonzalez's memo, he sent or received 14 different memos, including the Bybee memos, the John Yoo memos, that essentially have watered down our standard for human rights in this country. Let's listen to this exchange with Wolf Blitzer. Go ahead.
He converted to Islam. This is very embarrassing for the Justice Department, the fact that you've had to shell out $2 million to this guy for these false charges that were leveled against him.
Listen, there was a mistake made. There was a mistake made in reading the fingerprints, and we're accountable for the successes. We're also accountable for the mistakes, and the mistake here was made by the Department of Justice. We acknowledge that, and that's why the settlement was reached.
But there have been other mistakes that have been made, others who have been picked up, arrested, held, detained for long periods of time, and then released with an apology. Is it because of the environment after 9/11? What's going on?
Well, I don't know the specific cases you're referring to, Wolf. But listen, as we do with every circumstance, we make an evaluation about what happened, what mistakes were made, if any. And if, in fact, such as in this case, a mistake was made, the determination was made within the department that this was the appropriate outcome, that this person was entitled to this money, this person was entitled to an apology. And so that's the decision that was made by the department. And going forward, obviously, we will do everything we can.
Well, this is an interesting spin-filled answer, Paul, but Blitzer doesn't even attempt to find out if there's any individual who's responsible for the mistakes that led to a $2 million payout.
No, and you know, this just highlights why it's so important that we have judicial oversight of these kinds of decisions. You know, from the beginning, the Bush administration's position on these kinds of cases has been that basically these decisions are the president's to make and his alone. For instance, in the Jose Padilla case, where there was new video today released of him showing how he's being subjected to some sort of sensory deprivation and things, in some instances, their position on that, and here's a guy who's an American citizen who was picked up in Chicago, their position has always been that the courts, not just that they're right to detain him, but that the courts have no right to even oversee whether or not they should be detaining him.
Yeah, that's Cheney's remark.
Absolutely, and basically it's that, to me, is the very definition of tyranny, the idea that the president can, on his say-so, lock somebody up with no lawyer, no ability to challenge their detention, essentially for life, if he wishes, it's just because he's the president. And we've had lots of other cases. You know, there's the case of the German man who was picked up and sent to Guantanamo and eventually released because it turns out that it was a case of mistaken identity. You have this Canadian man who was...
Maher Arar. Uh-huh.
Right, who was picked up and sent to Syria, where he was tortured. In some of these cases, in the Al-Masri case, the guy from Germany, the administration is saying that he shouldn't be able to challenge what happened in court because if they revealed what happened to him and what he was subjected to, then that would help the terrorists figure out what our methods are.
Yeah.
They're arguing the same thing in the cases of people in Guantanamo, that if they allege that they've been tortured and talk about the interrogation techniques that have been used on them, then that will help the terrorists figure out how we're torturing people. So it's this really kind of it really begins to bring one in the mind of Orwell in 1984, this idea that you know, you can't challenge your detention because if you do, other people would figure out that you're what's been done to you, and that the president has the sole right, just on nothing but his say-so, to lock people up for life.
And it's so phony because we know what happened to El-Masri. We know he was tortured. He's described it in rich detail. Yet they want to pretend that those facts are not out in the open. Well, I want to thank you, Paul, for joining us today. We'll talk again real soon.
It's been my pleasure. I look forward to it.
That's Paul Waldman. Visit the website, mediamatters.org. And you can criticize the media yourself. Coming up next, Dean John Britton talks about ending segregation or desegregation efforts. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The holiday season is here again, and what perfect time to take advantage of the great selection and low prices of the finest used cars in the county. At ZNS Auto Dealership in Monterey, they have been partners for over 30 years. Located at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard, ZNS wants to be your partner in choosing that right car for you or your loved one. ZNS has it, whether it's a truck, SUV, minivan, compact, or luxury automobile. Open every day on Del Monte Boulevard, Monterey. ZNS Auto, where partnership works.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, be the path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
This is Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to prunetarealestate.com.
Hello, I'm Vince Kohler, chair of the Monterey County Democratic Party. I'd like to tell you about the perfect holiday gift for Democrats, victory shares. What's a victory share? It's a personalized certificate showing that you've made a contribution to one of the most effective Democratic organizations in the state of California. And for as little as $20, you can buy a victory share for your friend or loved one, or for yourself. Your victory share contribution will fund crucial activities like voter organizing and candidate development. And each victory share will also entitle the holder to special benefits, including gifts and invitations to events. In the November election, the Monterey County Democrats made a critical difference in the victories of Democratic values, candidates, and causes. We're now working on success in election 2008. What better gift than a share in that victory? A victory share. You can buy victory shares online now at MontereyCountyDemocrats.org. That's MontereyCountyDemocrats.org. Paid for by the Monterey County Democratic Central Committee.
We're going.
Tom Hartman.
5 or 6 years ago, I would have said, there's no way that the American people would tolerate a president suspending habeas corpus, doing away with the Posse Comitatus Act.
It's the Tom Hartman Program.
Doing away with the Fourth Amendment protections of privacy in your own home, Fifth Amendment right to not incriminate yourself, Sixth Amendment right to a speedy trial, Seventh Amendment right to make bail. I would have said, no, it's not possible. And now it's all happened.
Tom Hartman. Weekday mornings, 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
The Colts in session. The Colts in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge.
Oral arguments today before the United States Supreme Court about challenges to desegregation plans.
Here come the judge. Don't nobody but.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. We originate in San Francisco, and this program is produced by Matt Renner. And joining us to discuss the oral arguments and the legal issues behind them, someone who knows a lot more than I do, he is Dean John Britton from the Thurgood Marshall School of Law at Texas Southern University in Houston. And he has a very interesting history. He worked at a law firm in San Francisco, got his law degree from Howard University back in the 60s, taught law for many years at the University of Connecticut Law School, and then about 6 years ago accepted the position as dean of, as I mentioned, the Thurgood Marshall School of Law at Texas Southern University. Dean, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Hello, Mr. Collins, and let me just quickly correct one fact. I left the Thurgood Marshall School of Law about a year and a half ago, and now I'm the chief counsel for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law in Washington, D.C., a 40-year legal organization taking civil rights cases started by former President John F. Kennedy in 1963.
Well, my lapse was I just didn't continue to read on your resume because I was so impressed with what I'd read so far.
Quite all right.
And I also note that you are a sailor, and that puts you in very good stead with me.
And I still feel the hills of Powell Street in my veins as a continuing California lawyer and a former San Franciscan back there in the 1970s.
Wow. And it mentions that you were in a small firm with a partner. Would it be somebody we know?
I was with Philip Scott Ryan out there, well-known lawyer.
Uh-huh.
Often have done a lot of work. I was a part of what you might call the Phil Burton machine in those days and worked very closely with former mayor and powerful speaker of the assembly, Willie Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and he's still larger than life. quite a figure here in San Francisco. Well, tell me your thoughts, sir, on today's Supreme Court oral arguments.
My first thought is that those who oppose affirmative action seem to feel that the questions from the justices favor their side more than those who support the affirmative action or the school assignment in Seattle and in Jefferson County and Louisville, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
However, as a lawyer, one is always cautious in trying to determine the outcome of particularly a Supreme Court oral argument case based upon what comes up in the oral argument. Yet the justices were very actively engaged with the five counsel in the case. That is to say, you had the two counsel from Seattle, both for the school board favoring the school assignment plan and for the white student who was suing them, and then you had down in Kentucky, you had the school board lawyer there, and then you had the lawyer for the white child who was challenging there, and then you had the United States government that was allowed to argue their position against the school board plans of favoring choice and favoring the plan that allowed for some race-conscious measures near the end and assigning these schools to a voluntary school. And so it was a robust argument, pretty much bringing up all the kinds of issues that this case presents.
And do they deal with fundamental issues? I realize that by the time a case gets to the Supreme Court, the discussions can be relatively technical, relate more to law and precedent than the basic fact base, fact set of the cases before them. But was there any discussion about the basic notion that we still have racial problems in our country today and severe racial inequities?
Yes. The court did have questions that recognized the inequalities, recognized the former de jure system. Of course, when you talk about the court, you have nine justices, and essentially you have four justices who seem to be opposed to this kind of school assignment plan where race is used as a factor, and you have four justices who seem to support it, indeed, have written other opinions in support of affirmative action. And you have what is considered a justice on the fence, and that's Justice Anthony Kennedy, mm-hmm. indeed, from out there in California.
Right.
And so you had questions on both sides. You had the questions from Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for example, in the Louisville case, who thought it was ironic that the method the school board is using was once approved by the court because it was a former de jure, that is, segregation by law state in the South, that required the school districts to eliminate the racial segregation using race-conscious means. And now they can't do what they used to do as the school board tries to prevent from sliding back into segregation.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, you had skeptics such as the new Chief Justice, John Roberts, and the new Associate Justice Samuel Alito, as well as particularly one of the most conservative justices, Justice Antonin Scalia, all asking questions, expressing great skepticism about the assignment plans.
Mm-hmm. And is Kennedy still in a swing position, or do we presume that Alito and Roberts will go along with the conservative new majority on the court?
Well, Mr. Collins, in law that would be known as a compound question, because I can't answer both, but I knew just what you meant.
Okay.
The answer is really yes to both of your questions. Yes, Chief Justice Roberts and new Associate Justice Alito are considered to be in the camp against the affirmative action measures, along with Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas. And yes, Justice Kennedy is seen now as the new swing person, taking the place of former Associate Justice Sandra Day O'Connor, who resigned and retired from the court last year.
Mm-hmm. And as you read the comments and the questions of Justice Kennedy today, and we call this tea leaf type interpretation, did you sense any leanings?
Yes, to be honest with you, I saw that he was expressing doubt about these plans.
Mm-hmm.
However, that is not surprising, because while many of the tea leaf watchers, shall we say, within the Beltway here in Washington, D.C., do feel that he's the swing person, the history has shown that he's never been too favorable towards race issues. He was good in the Texas case, favoring the right of gay and lesbian persons to have a fundamental right to privacy, of their own intimacy. And he was good in the juvenile death penalty case, prohibiting it for persons 16 and 17 years of age. But he hasn't been that good on race cases in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And give us a quick sketch, if you will, of the difference between the issues presented from Louisville, Jefferson County, Kentucky, and the issues from Washington State.
That's a very good question, because the general discussion tends to lump them together. And they're just put together because they're two separate cases coming from two different parts of the region, and they have slightly different facts, but they have essentially more overlapping commonality than differences. That's why the Supreme Court put them together. But we'll start down south. In Louisville and Jefferson County, we mentioned both because they consolidated both the urban and the suburban county districts about 2002, and they've operated as one system to eliminate some of the inequalities between the urban Louisville district that was mostly non-white and the county district, which was more racially balanced. And Louisville and Jefferson County, being a part of the South, go back to Brown versus Board of Education, where separation of the children by race was once mandated, and where the school districts were sued, and where the court entered an order for desegregation and implemented a remedy that required them to assign students to school by race to promote integration and eliminate the segregation. However, in 2001, the school district was relieved of that court order through what is known as technically a unitary status determination by the court. In other words, the court ended the school desegregation because they said that Louisville and Jefferson County had done all they could do since 1954 to eliminate it, although there was still a high degree of segregation. But it's mainly caused by the residential segregation and the assignment of students to schools within their residential neighborhood. And so that's the difference between Louisville and between Kentucky, where they were once a de jure district. But the rest begins with commonality. For an example, the lawyer in Louisville said that even though they were a former segregated district, once they reached unitary status in 2001 and 2002, they were on the same footing as Seattle. So there goes the difference again. Seattle, being way up there in the Pacific Northwest, never had any official school segregation and never had any court order to desegregate. However, the district is no less segregated, where in that strip of Seattle, bounded by the water on one side and the hilly terrain on the other side, the rather narrow city, and going across their median dividing line, they're pretty much segregated down south, with non-whites and pretty much a more segregated north of the line with the predominantly whites.
Mm-hmm.
And so both districts didn't take on the commonality that they did something voluntary. Now, when I say voluntary, that's the opposite of mandatory. And in school desegregation law, most of the court orders were mandatory that school districts had to assign students in a certain way to eliminate the segregation and to promote integration. There are no more real mandatory school desegregation orders for the most part. And so everything is voluntary. And this amount of voluntary integration only affects a very small portion of students. Let's face it, these urban districts from San Francisco to Los Angeles to Houston, Texas, New Orleans, you name it, the urban districts are mainly segregated with upwards of 80 and 90% non-white students.
Right.
And so there's only a little bit left of integration in certain schools. And there, both districts voluntarily decided to try and maintain some integration. Everybody was assigned to a school in their neighborhood. Then students and parents could choose to go to other schools for what they thought were better education. And both districts with commonality had a system of rewarding some preference to a choice of the school, the distance from the home of the student to the school, whether the school they wanted to go to already had the sibling and keep the family children together in one school. And then in the end, if there was a they don't like to use the term tiebreaker, but they like to refer to the term a balancing effect. And in the end, there was only one seat left, hypothetically, and it was between a black child and a white child. They would make the determination, all other factors being equal that I mentioned, on what would promote integration within a certain range. In one school, it's 30 or so, up to 60%. Another school is 40, up to 70%. And they would make the choice in order to promote both cultural and educational diversity. And that's where the rub came, because mm-hmm. the white child who wanted to get into the school of his or her choice was denied, and they sued under the 14th Amendment, Equal Protection Clause of the United States Constitution, grants everybody equal treatment, and the law looks very skeptically when the government uses race. And ironically, 52 years after Brown, everybody is invoking Brown versus Board of Education on both sides of this issue. Everybody is claiming the same rights to equal protection. And what some say is upside down and inside out is whether you can treat this voluntary integration in 2006, 2007, to try and maintain a little bit of integration. It should be treated with the same skepticism that the court treated the segregation in the Deep South, where the laws expressly put white people ahead and put non-white people behind and kept them segregated both on race and tried to subjugate them. So a lot of the questions today dealt with the distinction of this 2003 case called Grutter and Gratz versus Bollinger, the president of the University of Michigan at that time, and what we'll mm-hmm. call the University of Michigan cases.
Right.
And this case in 2003, 3 years ago, dealt with the same issues today pretty much, except it applied to the universities and whether universities could use race as a factor in the admissions process in order to create a culturally diverse group of students for what the university said was the betterment of a sound education.
Mm-hmm.
And so they asked, well, since the court upheld the use of race in the Michigan cases for a college admission, could the school boards do the same thing in K through 12 grades? And there they, again, like lawyers, start pointing out the differences. Those in favor of the race-conscious measure said, yes, the school board should have the same discretion that the colleges had. And those who opposed said, well, the colleges were allowed to do it because of their academic freedom to determine what's best, whereas the grade schools don't have any academic freedom, and they shouldn't be able to do it. But yet the people in support of the school boards come back and say, but the courts have always given school boards much wider discretion than even colleges in where to assign students because the court doesn't know the best education practices.
We're going to take a quick break and return with John Britton. He's the former dean of the Thurgood Marshall School of Law at Texas Southern, and he's now the chief counsel at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights. We're talking about today's oral arguments before the Supreme Court, and if you'd like to join us with a question or a comment, I'd love to hear from you right now. Call us toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant at Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, the Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's a Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
People are talking about the show. Weekday mornings 9 to 10 on KRXA 540. Does it really suck less?
You guys are in many ways so self-referential that it doesn't let a guy like me feel like he can be part of the conversation.
We try not to be too self-referential, and we'll try to catch ourselves. I appreciate your call.
I wish I knew what that meant.
I wish I knew what that meant. Okay. But you're sucking less than you used to.
You got cooking. How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right. Dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Politicians may come and go, but for the past 33 years, Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey. Technically proficient, Dr. Turner specializes in listening to every patient's concerns and feelings. And because Dr. Turner cares about you, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112, 831-375-1112, 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner, 375-1112. He listens, he cares.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines are open if you'd like to talk with us about the action before the Supreme Court today, oral arguments in these two cases regarding desegregation efforts. And we continue with John Britton, as we mentioned, former dean of the Thurgood Marshall School of Law at Texas Southern, and now the chief counsel, deputy director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. And Dean Britton, I also noticed that you served as president of the National Lawyers Guild, and Marjorie Cohn is a frequent contributor to this program. She's the new president of that group. Do you know her?
Know her very well.
Yeah, she's terrific, isn't she?
In fact, your San Francisco Bay Area has several former National Lawyers Guild presidents.
Like who else?
Dorn Weinberg.
Mm-hmm.
And Doris Walker. And I forgot the third one right off. Peter. Mm-hmm. Forgot Peter's last name just quickly.
Maybe Peter Keene?
No, not Peter Keene.
Yeah.
But well-known lawyer, takes a lot of political cases out there. Mm-hmm. Right, named Jody.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I know many people in the Lawyers Guild out in San Francisco.
Great. Well, returning to the cases before the Supreme Court today, is there a sense on your part that the nation has given up on efforts to deal with segregation, and we're just kind of trying to pretend that we've put these issues behind us, the problems are mostly fixed, and that opportunities are equal for every American? I mean, there seems to be a disconnect here between the careful legal arguments and the reality in most American cities, north and south.
Yes, that is a valid observation. And there's a reason for it. The Supreme Court has largely abandoned school integration and desegregation. In fact, in the last big case, the Jenkins versus Missouri case dealing with Kansas City, it said basically that Kansas City and a federal court could not try and create a greater integrative measures in the surrounding suburban cities and towns and school districts unless they could show that the suburban districts caused the segregation within Kansas City. That certainly hammered at least one nail out of four into the proverbial coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, there's been no corresponding effort by the U.S. Department of Education, particularly its Office of Civil Rights, to do anything with school integration. And the same is true for the U.S. Department of Justice and the Civil Rights Division and the Education Section within that unit. So there are two out of the three branches of government, and certainly the Bush administration has focused only on No Child Left Behind, which has absolutely no integration steps and components, really, within it. In addition, the communities of color, who've been the beneficiaries of school integration for many years, have grown weary and frustrated with the almost futile attempts to try and maintain and sustain any degree of integration across the country. Yet, on the other hand, as the numerous briefs of friends of the court in this case show, from all social science research, objective social science research, I might add, an integrated experience for particularly a child of color in grade schools is one of the most advantageous steps to improving their life chances, their educational success, and their general success in life. Integration is still a benefit to education for minorities without any corresponding detriment to whites, and in fact, increasingly it's seen as an advantage to whites because by the year 2050, the people of color as we know it are going to outnumber the Caucasians. Already in your state of California, indeed in your city of San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
Caucasians are a numerical minority.
Right.
And in the public schools, students of color in California are a numerical majority. So in short, it's beneficial for whites to learn to live with non-whites who will comprise a majority of the society. The integration helps limit and reduce bias and prejudice and ignorance that's often fueled by the separation of the races.
Well, Dean Britton, as just an average white guy, I have to say that I'm embarrassed by the trend here and this desire to sweep under a large legal rug the critical issues of the former minorities' oppression or at least squeeze on a regular basis of different minority groups. And what really confounds me, you know, goes back to the Bakke case, the med student at the University of California, who claimed that he was a victim of reverse discrimination. As a white American, I have occasionally suffered setbacks due to affirmative action and the promotion of non-white people. But I have greater resources and greater opportunity to begin with. And so I feel kind of flummoxed to see my fellow white Americans really turn a blind eye to the problems that continue to fester and pretend that we can just let the court rule that, well, the work is done and we don't have to worry about it anymore.
That's certainly one of the attitudes in the society today. Many people may ask, you know, what is all this about? By the way, as much as the focus was on the argument in the court with the nine justices today, there were hundreds of demonstrators outside the court,
yeah,
who were mainly students of color, mainly young high school and college students, many of whom had come from Detroit. They certainly came from Louisville, Kentucky, and they came from the surrounding area, and they came under their First Amendment right to petition their government, even the court, to protest what they perceive as the reversal of Brown versus Board of Education. So, yes, 52 years after Brown, it looks like it's in the intensive care unit. I would say that Brown is still, though, an ideal. It's certainly a beacon of what America stands for in guiding us through the treacherous waters of race conflict in this nation. However, if the court rules against the steps that were undertaken both by Seattle School District and the Jefferson County Board of Education, with overwhelmingly widespread support among all diverse communities in both of those cities of what they wanted and what they thought was best for their education, it will represent a hammer on top of the coffin of Brown versus Board of Education, and this decision will be the nail, and the justices will be hammering into the coffin of Brown versus Board of Education.
Dean Britton, a pleasure to talk with you today. Thanks for joining us. John Britton is the chief counsel at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Tired of that dreaded drive into town for fresh quality produce? The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village has the perfect solution to your problem. Owners Ed Drobnik and Don Bikey have over 50 years of combined experience in the produce business and are passing the substantial savings on to their customers. The Produce Barn offers a wide selection of conventional and certified organic seasonal fresh fruits and vegetables. We also carry a fine selection of specialty candies and snacks, exquisite gourmet gift items, and feature Freedom Meats, savory sausages, bacon, and marinated fresh meats. Heck, we even throw in free recipes. So, whether you're a restaurant, lodge, home chef, or treasured village visitor, stop by the Produce Barn at 13750A Center Street in the Center Street Plaza, behind Wells Fargo, and right next to the Chatterbox. We're open 7 days a week.
The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village, 659-5916. That's 659-5916. The Produce Barn.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
President Bush tries the big tent approach.
Another outreach to a Shiite leader in Iraq. I'm Mark Knoller at the White House.
Can racial factors be used to prevent school resegregation?
School boards all over are struggling with this problem.
I'm Barry Bagnato in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. After a weekend when the U.S. military's losses in Iraq totaled 13, President Bush today hosted an Iraqi political leader he's avoided until now.
In an effort to build support for the unity government in Iraq, Mr. Bush spent more than an hour with Abdulaziz al-Hakim, a Shiite cleric and head of the political party with the largest voting bloc in the Iraqi parliament.
I told him that we're not satisfied with the pace of progress in Iraq.
Neither is al-Hakim. Speaking through a translator, he made clear that he welcomes help from the U.S., but said there's a limit.
Therefore, we believe that the Iraqi issue should be solved by the Iraqis with the help of friends everywhere.
And for al-Hakim, that includes Iran, where he lived in exile during the reign of Saddam Hussein. Mark Knoller, CBS News, the White House.
Some good news about the family from San Francisco that disappeared during a vacation in Oregon. Katie Kim and her two young daughters have been found alive, stranded in their car. They've been airlifted to a hospital. The father, James Kim, is still missing. Authorities say he'd set off on snowshoes to get help. Now this.
New Michelin tires on sale from Sears, along with family, friends, and rum balls. Something to be thankful for. With new tires, you can drive to the store to buy the forgotten can of cranberry and the extra batteries. You can go to find the last-minute gift for that last-minute nephew who shows up late with his roommate. With Michelin tires, the holidays just seem brighter.
Get the lowest price of the year on Michelin tires, only at Sears Auto Center. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 12/24/06.
You're on the Ovaltine Nutrition Hotline with nutritionist Felicia Stoller.
Felicia, I know that flavoring milk is a good way to get my kids to drink more milk, but is there a difference in chocolate milk flavorings?
There really is. Compare the nutrition in rich chocolate Ovaltine to Nesquik powder and see the difference. Ovaltine contains over twice as many vitamins and minerals as Nesquik, so Ovaltine's more nutritious. And kids love the taste of rich chocolate Ovaltine. When it comes to nutrition, Ovaltine's the better choice.
More Ovaltine, please!
For the first time since John Roberts and Sam Alito joined the Supreme Court, it's taken up an affirmative action case. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports.
Bundled up demonstrators chanted in the cold outside as the justices and lawyers held a heated debate about race in public schools. Resegregation is growing, Justice Stephen Breyer warned.
School boards all over are struggling with this problem.
Officials in Seattle and Louisville want to use racial factors to assign students to maintain diversity achieved through desegregation. Why not, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg wondered.
What's constitutionally required one day gets constitutionally prohibited the next day. That's very odd.
But court conservatives Antonin Scalia Scalia and Anthony Kennedy worry about individual rights.
Even if the objective is okay, you cannot achieve it by any means whatever.
That takes us on a very perilous course.
A ruling is likely before the next school year. Barry Bagnotto, CBS News, Washington.
John Bolton had his exit interview today.
Many thanks.
He met with President Bush, who reluctantly accepted Bolton's decision to step down as U.N. ambassador when his recess appointment expires later this month. Congress has been blocking the nomination, and Bolton's prospects only dimmed when the Democrats won control in the midterm elections. The Santa Ana wind is blowing again, and it's fanning a wildfire in Moor Park, California, a wealthy community about 50 miles northwest of Los Angeles. Five homes have been consumed by the flames. Hundreds are threatened. CBS News correspondent Sandra Hughes is covering.
A December wildfire is almost unheard of, but officials are saying that we might expect to see more of these because global warming may mean warmer, drier conditions. And that could cause the fire season to extend from summer to year-round.
This looks like arson. Authorities say the fire started at two separate points early Sunday morning. Taco Bell seems to be the common denominator in an E. coli outbreak that sickened dozens of people in the New York metropolitan area. At least two are severely ill with kidney failure. Investigators say most of the victims got sick after eating at Taco Bell restaurants in late November. Nine Taco Bells in New Jersey and on Long Island are closed as a precaution. A jury in Houston has convicted truck driver Tyrone Williams in the deaths of 19 illegal immigrants who were left locked inside a sweltering trailer 3 years ago. It's the second time Williams has been found guilty. His first conviction was overturned on appeal. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Did you know, by law, minimum credit card payments are now double? If credit card debt is ruining your life, call Debt Relief of America. With one free five-minute phone call, they can show you how to eliminate up to 60% of your credit card debt. That includes principal and interest. They will negotiate with your creditors to save you thousands of dollars in interest, penalties, and late fees.
DRA worked with my creditors and cut my debt in half.
I considered bankruptcy and divorce. I was fortunate enough to find Debt Relief of America. Now I can see myself being able to enjoy life again. I consider their help one of the best presents I have ever received.
Call now for a free, no-obligation consultation. Relief is our middle name. People just like you saved over $15 million in credit card bills. We can do the same for you. Call 800-732-7092. Not available in all states. That's 800-732-7092. 800-732-7092.
You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show, live from the Left Coast. Will Robert Gates be confirmed?
I took the correspondence class in wiretapping and assassination. I learned the lingo and the proper etiquette for covert operation. I got my degree in top secrecy, cause I'm gonna be a spy. CIA,
yeah, don't we need a spook at the Pentagon?
I'll tell you if you keep it quiet, CIA and FBI, etc. They've reformed their former ways and got themselves a brand new raise on Detra. And all the intelligence personnel will work as one well.
Oh, yeah.
The CIDIATFBI is on the scene.
That's right. They're all working together now because Czar Negroponte is so effective. I'm Peter B. Collins, and this half hour I want to talk about tomorrow when the hearings are scheduled to start in the Senate regarding the confirmation of Robert Gates to serve as the new Secretary of Defense in the Bush administration. Joining us to talk about it is Captain David McMichael, served in the Marine Corps, worked for the CIA as an analyst, and he's been a professor of history at the University of Oregon as well. He is a member of the steering committee of VIPS, that's Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and two of his colleagues have been on our program in recent weeks to talk about the Gates nomination, Mel Goodman and Ray McGovern. And he also wrote a powerful piece on November 14th, which is still posted at counterpunch.org, about this controversial nomination. Captain McMichael, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. I haven't been called Captain McMichael in quite a while.
Well, you want to be doctor, captain, professor?
Just call me Mr. McMichael. How about that?
All right, sir.
That covers everything.
Well, thanks for joining us here today.
Yeah, sure.
First up, what did you do this morning when you heard the news that John Bolton is resigning and the Bush administration will not try an end run to sustain him on his recess appointment?
Well, I poured myself another cup of coffee and rather toasted myself. My predictions rarely come true right on the money, but in the piece you referred to, I said that while I was quite sure that the Gates nomination would sail through without too much difficulty, although with a lot of questions being asked, that the bone that would have to be tossed to the Democrats, who mm-hmm. now have a lot of weight in the Congress, would be John Bolton's head. And apparently, I can argue that that's exactly what happened.
And that oversized mustache comes with the head?
That's quite a mustache.
I think I'll get him a trimmer for Christmas. You know, I have a beard and a mustache, and I take care of it at home, and somebody ought to help him with that.
Yeah, well, you know, when you come at people like a raging walrus, it helps to have a mustache like that, I think.
And yeah.
That's been his diplomatic technique for some years.
Yeah. A little bit later on in the program today, we have a choice archived quote from John Bolton about his desire to remodel the United Nations building and just eliminate 10 floors or so. Beyond the Bolton nomination and the bone that that represents for Democrats in the Senate, I'm a little disappointed that the Democrats don't seem to be willing to make this a tougher process. And like you, I expect Gates to be confirmed. But I would like to see the Democrats throw some obstacles in the way, ask the tough questions, not only about his past, but about his current association with the Bush family, a keeper of the Bush One library there at Texas A&M, and his involvement in the Baker Iraq study group, because he's being presented now as an outsider. Fresh eyes, as Bush called it when he accepted or, you know, kicked Rummy out. But he's not fresh, and many of the plaudits that have been laid his way are basically not squaring with the facts of his history.
Yeah, well, I that's the main rap, if you will, against Gates and several of my former CIA colleagues, in particular Mel Goodman, for one, who testified very vigorously against Gates's appointment as director of the CIA in 1991,
right.
As did my old boss, Hal Ford, very, very senior CIA analyst, and the former last head of CIA station in Saigon, also testified again, as did Jennifer Glaudeman, who's now practicing law out there in San Francisco, and numerous others. And the main rap on Gates, well, there are two really. One, in terms of his attention to his career advancement, which put him in the category of those who saw intelligence analysis as necessarily being framed to support the objectives of the senior decision makers.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty clear throughout his.
And are we not now just coming off a bender of that type? And don't we need somebody?
No, it's very interesting, by the way, that during those hearings, I covered them for Pacifica Radio in another. out there doing other things.
Well, you must know Larry Bensky.
Oh yes, I do. Larry and I and Laura Flanders together. That they're good people, both of them.
Yeah.
But the rap there is that as they say, the one is stylistic, if
mm-hmm.
you will. Okay. The second and very serious one was substantive, and that was as head of the Directorate of Operations under William Casey, and later on as deputy director of the CIA under William Casey, Robert Gates oversaw estimates which didn't even raise the possibility that the Soviet Union was about to collapse, which is, you know, like, if that's any of the, you know, the had brought himself up to be the head Soviet analyst in the CIA. And this, you know, has seriously undermined the credibility of the CIA. That price is still being paid. Mm-hmm. And secondly, I will tell you that at the hearings in 1991, he had, of course, after Casey's death, he had been advanced by George Bush the First to become the director of the CIA,
which was withdrawn, right?
Which was withdrawn because of the emergence of the Iran-Contra scandal,
mm-hmm.
and part of his background was that he couldn't remember on 33 separate occasions when special counsel Lawrence Walsh, independent counsel, let's say Lawrence Walsh, asked him about his knowledge of key facts about that. Walsh only very reluctantly did not attempt to indict Gates.
Right.
The tracks were well covered, if mm-hmm. there were tracks, I'll accept that. But the whole, you know, fact is that he was brought forward again in 91 when George Bush the first was president, and this, of course, it says as much about George Bush the first as it does about Bob Gates. The Bushes, all of them, have this tendency. You could call it loyalty, and it's also one could call it arrogance. And once they identify someone as a friend, let's say, or a protege,
mm-hmm.
They're going to push them regardless. And this was done. This was made possible, by the way, in the hearings in 91 by the fact that the then chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence was David Boren. Dave Boren was a senator from Oklahoma,
right,
and a personal friend of Mr. Gates. And his chief legislator committee assistant at that time with a chap named George Tenet, who later became
right.
director of the CIA. And believe me, I had some good lines out there. And these guys were determined that Gates was going to go through. I don't want to get down into minutia here, mm-hmm. but you may recall the Keating scandal.
Oh yes,
at that time.
Yeah, I went to school with Charlie Keating's kids.
Yes. Well, one of the key senators on the committee, a man of prestige who was very much opposed, because he told me so, to the Gates appointment, was the late Senator Alan Cranston of
mm-hmm.
California.
Yep.
And he had his fingers burned in that Keating scandal.
Oh, indeed.
And it was instructive, to say the least, to watch the way Boren played that to make sure that Al Cranston, you know, voted for the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
And it did, you know, when it went to the floor of a Democratic-controlled Congress, and as you know, when a committee, you know, votes someone onto the floor, they're
right.
rarely turned down. But in
right.
this case, the greatest number of people voting against the CIA director nominee in the Senate did so that time, over 34 votes against.
And we need to take a break. David McMichael will return in a moment and talk about one of those senators, Carl Levin, and try to figure out how he might treat the new Gates nomination and how he might vote on it. That's coming up next, and if you'd like to join us, call me now, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. The Gates hearings start tomorrow. They may end tomorrow, too, incredibly. We'll continue in just a moment, live here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hey. every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate. The number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540.
If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Roller Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the Old Granary Building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
God listens to Billy Sunshine. Maybe you should, too. Sundays, 3 to 5, on KRXA, 540 AM, The Billy Sunshine Show with Pilar, coming soon.
You see, we're on a mission from God.
Let's take a look at your drive in and around the Monterey Bay area. Busy afternoon and some better news for Watsonville. Had a very bad crash northbound along Highway 1 at Riverside Drive. Now, the major injury crash has been cleared. All lanes are open now, but traffic still very heavy in both directions. Let's go to Capitola, southbound along Highway 1, just after Bay Avenue. Watch for a crash here. Three vehicles, they're off in the center divide. CHP on the scene as well. In Opal Cliffs Drive at 41st Avenue, a broken down roofing truck is blocking the roadway, and it will be there for, unfortunately, quite a while. Let's go to Prunedale, southbound 101 before Echo Valley Road. A stall here in the second lane from the left. And in Monterey, watch for a problem southbound along Highway 1 and Highway 68. It's a crash with two vehicle blocking lanes. CHP is not yet on the scene. This look at traffic is brought to you by Advil. You don't need different pain relievers for different pains. Wherever you hurt, Advil works. It's the everyday pain reliever. I'm Alex Daly with traffic on KRXA 5
Show.
Will Robert Gates get what's coming to him? Well, the hearings are supposed to start tomorrow before the Senate Armed Services Committee. And I was floored when I watched Meet the Press yesterday. And John Warner, the outgoing chairman who will chair these hearings this week, announced that he hopes to begin and end the Gates hearings tomorrow. And then report the committee vote out to the floor. And Bill Frist deciding that 95 days of work in 1 year is just enough for the Senate is going to adjourn the Senate at the end of this week. And I ask, what's the hurry? Why is the Democratic leadership appearing to move to allow this nomination to go forward? We have Dianne Feinstein and a couple of other senators who have announced they'll vote against it, but notably Carl Levin, who voted against the Gates nomination in 91 with a clear statement that he didn't think he could be trusted to tell the truth to the Congress. He has said that, oh, that's 15 years ago, and he really didn't tip his hand in the discussion yesterday. We continue with David McMichael, a retired Marine captain, retired professor of history, retired former analyst from the CIA, and a commentator for Pacifica Radio. Does that cover it?
That does it. The emphasis is on retired here.
Now, what is your take? Why are the Democrats making this so easy? Again, I am a pragmatist, I don't expect them to reject this nomination in the committee, but I don't want to see the Democrats, mostly support it.
Well, I think, or at least let me speculate as to why they will do this. Bring your mind back to Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the then chief counsel for the Judiciary Committee in the Congress was a fellow named Jerry Ziefman, who I later became quite good friends with. He's retired, lives up in Connecticut now. But he was preparing for impeachment, and that was ready to go ahead. This was a very important thing. However, the leadership of the Democratic Party at that time made a calculated decision that it would be better to let Nixon continue in office and keep him, in the phrase used, twisting slowly in the wind
mm-hmm.
for the next 2 years to, with the disgrace continually being held up, to make it easier for a Democratic victory in the forthcoming presidential election.
But why not lay out some markers here on the past of Robert Gates and limits on his future to assert Democratic authority? This oversight has been sorely missing from the Republican majorities.
Oh, yeah.
Democrats have very narrow control, but still they can exercise oversight, and I think they need to use that muscle to at least a reasonable degree.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and one can hope that after January 1st, when the Congress officially goes, to the new Congress, that Democrats will in fact do that, and that there will be serious investigations to which Mr. Gates will be called to explain actions taken in the Department of Defense by his predecessor, and what actions are being planned, and all of this. I think it's unreasonable to expect that under the present circumstances that there will be a very serious attempt. Now, I don't think, although I've heard this from several sources, that John Warner will be able to succeed in holding these hearings to one day.
I hope you're right.
If for no other reason, this is one of the biggest games in town for a while, and if I know the people who are in the Senate,
mm-hmm.
many very fine people, they all like to get into the spotlight.
Yeah. Let me sneak in a caller here. We're running short on time. Dave,
yeah.
Join us from Eureka with David McMichael. Go right ahead.
Yes, David. And Peter, I think you're largely making the point I called in about, because I think for a long time now the Democrats have been virtually locked out. They've been a minority. That's about to end, so there's no more excuse for that. Right now I think we should be hearing very clearly from them their intent to hold these criminals accountable for the antics they pulled. I'm not hearing that clearly yet, and I really wish it was. That's what I want.
Mm-hmm. I hear you, Dave. McMichael, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I heard him. One really hopes that there will be, serious investigations in the new Congress, and that people, will be held accountable. I
You know, I have my fingers crossed on that. The voice of the people, let me put it this way, in the recent congressional elections, you know, basically said, we want out of Iraq. And that is where the political capital that the Democrats have to spend will be used. Whether they will, feel that they can't go to the main thing, which is ending the war in the Middle East, is getting on a new course,
right?
Or whether they will settle.
David McMichael, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I thank you for
just
joining
very
us.
Quickly, whether they will simply settle, you know, for investigations that will bring up some.
And this is the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you have the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Is the only way to end racial discrimination in schools to practice racial discrimination in schools? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The U.S. Supreme Court is trying to decide if race can be used as a tiebreaker in giving students their choice of schools. It comes up because districts like Seattle are trying to keep public schools integrated, even in neighborhoods that aren't. So Seattle came up with a racial tiebreaker. Here's how it works. I quote from the court case. If an oversubscribed high school is racially imbalanced, meaning that the racial makeup of the student body differs by more than 15% from the racial makeup of the students of the Seattle Public Schools as a whole, and if the sibling preference does not bring the oversubscribed high school within plus or minus 15% of the district's demographics, the race-based tiebreaker is triggered and the race of the applying student is considered. Got that? It means if your kid wants to go to a popular school, there is the very real possibility that the school district could legally tell you, I'm sorry, your child's skin is the wrong color. It's a race-neutral rule because a kid of any skin color could be disqualified, but the bottom line is that your kid could be told, we have enough of your kind here. The school district is in a tough spot. It's trying to convince all races that every child has equal access. But you can talk about integration and fairness and compelling state interest, but when a kid is told for whatever reason, I'm sorry, we have enough of your kind, it ticks people off. The Supreme Court is going to have to decide whether ultimately it is okay to try to end discrimination by deliberately practicing it. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging. And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam, firewalls, and web filters. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Concern about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. You can join us in the conversation here whenever the urge strikes you, and we pay for the call. It's toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can always email me, peter at peterbcollins.com. On Friday, Felipe Calderon took the oath of office, was sworn in under unusual circumstances in Mexico City, and does it or does it not end this disputed election, which takes us back to this past summer, one of the closest elections, I believe, in Mexican history, if not in world history, came down to, what, about 200,000 votes out of 41 million cast. And amidst the backdrop of continuing protests from the opponent López Obrador and his supporters, López Obrador swore himself in as president in a non-official ceremony just a couple of weeks back. It has been quite a chaotic situation. And California's Governor Schwarzenegger was there as a witness of this bizarre swearing-in ceremony, and he said it was, well, kind of like a rumble. We turn to Robert Collier, who writes with authority for the San Francisco Chronicle on international issues. We last talked to him about his coverage of Iraq. Rob Collier, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me your thoughts. First, describe this kind of unusual ceremony that took place under very difficult circumstances on Friday.
I'm not aware of any other inauguration anywhere else in the world being such a circus, in recent history at least. For several days, opposition lawmakers and ruling party lawmakers in Congress camped out overnight, and they're tucking themselves into sleeping bags, taking over competing parts of the podium where the president-elect was scheduled to be inaugurated. Essentially, the opposition was threatening to blockade the inauguration, to physically keep it from taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And so it became a shoving match, literally, who would physically control the spot where the swearing-in ceremony was scheduled to take place. As it turns out, the opposition got out-elbowed and out-shoved by the ruling party lawmakers, and so, indeed, Felipe Calderon was sworn in a four-minute ceremony. He was rushed on and rushed off with elbows aflying, and now he's president.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bad sign for the next 6 years of Calderon's his term in office.
It is a less than auspicious start, no question about that. And from what I understand, Rob, he had been sworn in by the outgoing president the night before, but the Mexican Constitution requires that the oath of office be administered in a formal ceremony in the legislative hall.
Right, so he did it twice. They were clearly worrying about just exactly how many seconds they were going to have to do the deed on the actual stage in front of the Congress, so they did a more leisurely ceremony the night before where they could get all the words in.
Mm-hmm. And so they did meet, I suppose, the constitutional requirements, and he hot-tailed it out of there after 4 minutes and then went to a reception with all of his supporters. It wasn't the kind of, inauguration festivities that we see in other parts of the world where it's more of a unifying event of trying to bring all parties together.
Right. He doesn't have any consensus behind him. Let's remember that he won only 35% of the vote in a three-way, actually more than three-way race, but three major candidates on July 2nd. So he doesn't have a majority in Congress. He doesn't have a majority of popular sentiment. So he's in considerably worse position than, for example, George Bush was in the 2000 election, where he didn't win the popular vote, but he wound up in control of government. Calderon doesn't have any of that, and so he's got to scrape and scrabble for consensus for votes in Congress. He's got to scrape and scrabble for public support in the face of some really daunting problems. He's got big public security problems. Their drug violence is at a higher level than ever. There are bodies showing up almost every day from drug cartel feuds. And
Oaxaca is a flashpoint.
Oaxaca between leftist protesters and the governor of the PRI, the third party, the long ruling party that long-term ruling party that ruled Mexico from 1929 to 2000. They've one of their last sort of bulwarks of old style cacique control in Oaxaca. So that's a big flashpoint of violence. There are guerrilla groups organizing. Starting to set off bombs and threatening further violence. The economy is surprising. It's in what you could call decent shape, but it should be in a lot better shape. Mexico is, of course, very dependent on trade with the United States. The old saying, when the United States catches a cold, Mexico catches pneumonia. So its exports to the U.S. are all important for the Mexican economy. If the U.S. economy, which is now starting to decline, or at least its rate of growth is starting to decline, goes into, catches cold, and Mexico really will catch cold. And also the price of oil is starting to go down. That hurts Mexico, which is a major oil exporter.
Now, elections in our country in 2000 and 2004 reflected a deeply divided country, and those of us on the losing side felt that the elections themselves were unfair in both cases, Florida in 2000, problems in Ohio in 2004. But Al Gore and John Kerry accepted the outcome. There are many of their supporters who wish they hadn't conceded so easily or so quickly in each of those cases. But Bush has not had to face a Gore or a Kerry who has designated himself the shadow president and conducted a parallel swearing in. And it doesn't appear that López Obrador can be bought off, can be mollified, or, given some kind of a token assignment that would get him out of the way and help Calderón try to consolidate control.
That's true. It's a deeply divided and, I would say, really bitterly divided country. Calderón has not gone quietly into the sunset like Gore did. He's very loudly and angrily basically gambled everything on further confrontation. He paralyzed Mexico City for the downtown Mexico City with huge street demonstrations for 6 weeks after the July 2nd elections. His people again are threatening further protests. Now, let's be clear on one thing. López Obrador himself also does not have majority support. Nobody's got majority support in Mexico. It's a very deeply divided country. You go to some parts of the country, especially toward the north, and everything's fine. There's no problem whatsoever, and people are blissfully almost unaware of what's going on in the other world, which is Mexico City in the south, which has always been much more conflictive in Mexico. So really there are many Mexicos, many different Mexicos. Some have severe problems. They're very much third world countries with a lot of violence and conflict. Other parts of the country have very much less problems.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Rob Collier from the San Francisco Chronicle, and we're talking about Friday's inauguration of the new President Calderón of Mexico. Hal joins us from Coos Bay, Oregon. Hello, Hal. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. Yeah, this is a topic that I really am interested in. And one of the questions I have, first of all, I was going to say that I'm kind of happy to hear that Daniel Ortega became elected again. And now I just heard today that
Hugo Chavez.
Yeah, Chavez got elected again. And with the whole in Bolivia, the president of Bolivia, with the whole kind of like the pendulum swinging back and forth, and I really think that Central and South America and Mexico should be included in that, are starting to get themselves back from what I guess we used to call neoliberalism or the Americanization of all that area. So my question was basically in Mexico, I was wondering if, Peter, you almost questioned and answered my question except for the fact I was wondering if there actually was some, like, I had kind of heard that we had sent die bolting machines. I mean, was there actually some hanky panky going on with this election? And isn't that one of the reasons that there was so much protest afterwards? That there was, like, why didn't we have Jimmy Carter down there to oversee it or something?
There were certainly accusations of hanky panky, but they didn't involve electronic voting machines, to my knowledge.
In Mexico, no. In Venezuela, yes.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the Venezuelan Venezuela is a co-owner of the company, the United States, that is behind Diebold.
I think it's actually ES&S.
Uh-huh.
The other voting, there are three main voting machine companies, uh-huh. Sequoia, ES&S, and Diebold.
Okay.
Sorry. And I think it's ES&S or Sequoia, it's not Diebold, that okay. has investors from Venezuela. The story broke about 6 weeks ago, and they claim that it's not the government of Venezuela, but it's individuals. There have been some concerns about that. And it's interesting, just on the electronic voting issue, Hal, that
yeah.
in Venezuela, they used machines, but instead of a paper trail that was on a toilet paper roll that stayed with the machine, each voter was given a receipt, kind of like an ATM receipt, that listed their votes,
wow.
and if they approved, and that document accurately reflected each vote they had cast, then they were instructed to put it in a box at the polling place. Now, that leaves a voter-verified paper trail
right.
of the electronic voting process, which is far different from anything that so far has been offered in the United States to offset our concerns about the hackability and other security issues of electronic voting machines. So I think Venezuela's got it better than the U.S. right now. But to
yeah.
your original point, the issues about electoral misdeeds in Mexico were raised, but they weren't related to machines. Rob, what were the issues?
In Mexico, the issues were really the same historic issues as in all Mexican elections in recent decades. Less, however, as Mexico gradually has been cleaning up its act. But the residual leftovers were, first of all, simply the use of presidential authority to the presidential podium, which in the United States we take for granted that the president will campaign for his party. In Mexico, it's forbidden, and it's a real taboo. The use of government resources at all levels to basically funnel government money to the ruling party campaign.
Okay, so one of my other questions then is, like, can the United States afford for these countries to start nationalizing and using their own resources, like Venezuela's oil market, and how we have how we get really angry with Chavez because he's helping with his profits and turning into social programs instead of pure profit.
Well, Mexico has already nationalized its oil industry. It's called Pemex.
Uh-huh.
Both Mexico and Venezuela have nationalized their oil a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And in the case of Venezuela, Chavez, what he really has done is he has just decreased the margin of American companies doing contracting work in Venezuela and essentially forced them to pay more for the oil they pump out. But Venezuela is still the fourth largest foreign oil supplier to the United States. It still supplies about 1.5 million barrels a day. If you live in the central part of the country or the southeast part of the country, chances are that when you go up to the gas station, whichever gas station you fill up at, the gas you're putting in, at least part of it, will be Venezuelan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's the difference between a regular gas station like that and Citgo?
Citgo it basically is all Venezuelan gas, whereas a lot of other companies mix.
See.
Now, granted, Citgo does also, the oil business is gasoline retailing is a very complex business.
Right.
But
gentlemen, I got to stop us there because we're late for a break. Hal, thanks for your call today. We'll continue with Rob Collier from the San Francisco Chronicle. If you have a question about developments in Mexico, give us a call now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm Peter B. Collins.
This is Laura Pruneta, Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to prunetarealestate.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Let's take a look at your drive in and around the Monterey Bay area. It's actually good news. Most of our accidents have been cleared at this point for the moment. Let's go to Monterey. Southbound Highway 1 at Highway 68. Crash there and gone very quickly off onto the shoulder. In Watsonville, northbound Highway 1 at Riverside Drive. Major injury crash is also now cleared to the side of the road, but traffic is still heavy in both directions. Let's go to Monterey. Southbound 1 at Moonrose Avenue. An accident there with five vehicles now cleared to the right shoulder. And in Capitola, we finally cleared away this crash southbound along Highway 1 after Bay Avenue. It was a three-vehicle wreck. It's been cleared to the center divide. When they move those cars to the right shoulder, it'll be a little of a jam. I'll keep a close eye on that for you. Also in Prunedale, southbound 101 before Echo Valley Road, this wreck now off onto the shoulder. This look is brought to you by Sleep Train. Folks, right now get Sleep Train. I'll give you a free gift for the holidays when you purchase any of their premium mattress sets. Plus, on approved credit, you'll pay no interest till 2008. I'm Alex Daly with traffic on KRN.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 9 minutes away from the hour. My phone number is 888-5-PETER-B. And we got the Free Speech Zone coming up next hour. Lots of room for your calls and comments. We continue with Robert Collier from the San Francisco Chronicle. We're talking about Friday's dramatic and chaotic in swearing-in of President Calderon in Mexico City. Rob, you talked a few minutes ago about the fractured government, that there was no majority produced by this presidential election and that there's no majority in the Congress. And you also pointed out in the piece that you published in Friday's newspaper, a recent poll showed that 14% of Mexicans approve of López Obrador's move to set up a parallel government, and 30% believe he was the rightful winner of the election. Another poll showed that 13% support the idea of taking up arms in rebellion against the government. And you note that although 13% may seem small, it amounts to about 14 million people, which is, well, potentially a lot of unrest.
It is indeed. Nobody knows exactly, of course, what will happen. López Obrador himself is not calling for violence. He insists, and his followers insist, that they're going to have a completely peaceful campaign. But there are a lot of people on the margins stirring up trouble and organizing guerrilla groups. So we should not expect these movements to take on any majority support or any large numbers. But it doesn't take large numbers to cause a heck of a lot of trouble, and that may be what's ahead for Mexico.
Well, and describe some of his appointments, because from what I understand, he's appointed a loyalist to essentially crack down on the rebels in Oaxaca. And this could lead to, you know, further divisions where if the manner in which they try to restore order is seen as too heavy-handed, that that 13% that you just described in the poll who say that it's okay to take up arms in rebellion against the government, that's a kind of problem that could spread nationwide.
Well, the Minister of the Interior, or Gobernación, as they called it in Mexico, Francisco Ramirez Acuña, was the governor of Jalisco State. When he was there, there were no guerrilla groups in Jalisco, but there were student organizations and peasant protests, and he sent the police to, again, crackheads and took a very hard-line stand. So people are quite worried that he will try the same in Oaxaca State and in Mexico City against López Obrador's followers, and that could cause a lot of discontent and make people quite angry and really stir the hornet's nest. Again, let's not expect a second Mexican Revolution. This is not going to spread nationwide, but there could be a lot more unrest, a lot more trouble, a lot more instability, which could in turn further cause more Mexicans to emigrate to the United States in search of work and opportunity.
And on that note, Calderon talked about trying to create more work opportunities, employment opportunities inside Mexico to try to relieve the pressure that pushes many Mexicans across the border to work in a more lucrative environment. And yet that sounded to me like warmed over comments from Vicente Fox.
Generally, Calderon's policies are the exact same policies as Vicente Fox. He's from the same party, the National Action Party, or PAN. And they're generally moderate, conservative, free market policies. Calderon's only real announcements of policy initiatives since he was inaugurated were to announce that he was cutting spending, especially by cutting salaries of top officials, which is a perfectly good thing to do because Mexican top officials generally were paid a lot more even than their counterparts in the United States, cabinet members and others, and even just local top officials would make hundreds of thousands of dollars in salary. So that's a popular political move.
But it's only 10%.
Massive macro changes in the economy.
It's symbolic. It's 10%. I didn't realize those salaries were as high as you just described. Yeah. But still, 10% of a big number isn't that big a deal.
Exactly. So he's cutting his own salary by 10%. Fox's salary was about $245,000, which is actually quite a bit less than a lot of other local officials paid themselves. But still, it's chump change in the macro sense.
Mm-hmm. And we have about 2 minutes remaining, Rob. What's, now that we can look back, what is the legacy of Vicente Fox? What were his accomplishments, and what did he fail to do?
Well, his main accomplishment was simply that he defeated the PRI, the long-ruling party that was a sort of semi-dictatorship for many, many years. What did Fox do? Well, he gradually reformed, continued to reform the Mexican electoral system. It's cleaner than it used to be. Mexico is more of a democracy than it ever was now. So there, you know, there's gradual progress in that regard. He made slight improvements in accountability. The former president, Luis Echevarria, who was president in the early 70s and responsible for some massacres of students,
right,
is now under house arrest.
Mm-hmm.
So that's progress. But great stagnation. The gap between rich and poor is the same as always. In other words, huge. Corruption is still a horrible problem. Drug trafficking is worse than ever. So he was very much a status quo president in many ways. And his legacy, I think, will be that he's not himself accused of corruption. He's not leaving office a multimillionaire. So that's progress.
Mm-hmm. And there seemed to be real promise at the outset that Governor Bush of Texas would become president, and that there would be a much stronger relationship between Washington and Mexico City. That didn't really pan out, did it?
There's a lot of hope for, on both sides, for immigration reform in the U.S. Congress, which would start a real new era of U.S.-Mexican relations and, of course, would legalize the millions of undocumented Mexicans in the United States. Now, 9/11 did away with that. Immigration reform took a bottom priority immediately after that on the part of the Bush administration as everybody started looking for terrorists, including coming across the border, although mm-hmm. there was never any proof that there was any such thing coming yeah. across the border.
Rob, I'm out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. Robert Collier from the San Francisco Chronicle. We've been talking about Mexico. Coming up next in the Free Speech Zone, your phone calls, 888-5-PETER-B.
You got cooking. How's the back cooking? Something up with me.
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right, dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Of the 4 members of a San Francisco family who went missing in southern Oregon, 3 have been found alive. This is Josephine County Sheriff Brian Anderson.
At 1:45 today, a helicopter from Carson observed a female in the middle of the road waving an umbrella. Helicopter landed. We confirmed that it is Mrs. Kim and the 2 children.
Katie Kim and her daughters, aged 4 and 7 months, had apparently been huddled in their car since it crashed. They were airlifted to a hospital.
They're still looking for the father, who apparently left 2 days ago on foot from the crash location. So we're currently tracking him with our snow cats.
James Kim and his family were heading home after a Thanksgiving trip to the Pacific Northwest. They were last seen when they visited friends in Portland on the 25th. Nearly 40 people in the New York City suburbs have gotten sick. At least 2 are suffering kidney failure from E. coli bacteria of the same strain that contaminated spinach earlier this year. Most of the victims had eaten at Taco Bell restaurants. 9 Taco Bells have temporarily closed, and Tom Swazi, the county executive in Nassau County on Long Island, wants more to shut down.
There's no direct evidence that it can be proved, but we have enough evidence that we are concerned. And we, in abundance of caution, we want to notify the public that there are 4 Taco Bells here in Nassau County that we're investigating.
The company said over the weekend that it has strict food handling rules. Investigators say they're still trying to establish which particular type of food was the culprit. President Bush broadened his reach today as he searches for a solution in Iraq. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
It was an Oval Office meeting with Abdulaziz al-Hakim, a Shiite cleric and leader of the political party with the largest block of votes in the Iraqi parliament. Speaking through a translator, al-Hakim said the situation in Iraq is being subjected to defamation and distortion.
And the true picture is not being presented in order to show a dark side of what's happening in Iraq.
But even President Bush said the U.S. is not satisfied with the pace of progress in Iraq, and he thanked al-Hakim for his commitment to the unity government there. Mark Noller, CBS News, The White House.
The trucker involved in the deaths of 19 illegal immigrants who were locked in a trailer under the Texas sun has been convicted by a jury in Houston. The penalty phase begins Wednesday, and Tyrone Williams' lawyer, Craig Washington, promises to pull out all the stops.
Mitigation can be anything. Mitigation is any reason that argues against death.
any reason that argues against death.
A call for a ban on tobacco advertising and all other cigarette promotions. Researchers at UMass Medical School and Fitchburg State College in Massachusetts say a ban is warranted to protect children. They claim hundreds of thousands of kids start smoking each year as a direct result of seeing cigarettes featured in movies, videos, and in advertising. The Dow up 89 points today, the NASDAQ gained 35. This is CBS News.
Tiger Balm presents football superstar Jerry Rice.
Foxtrot.
I can't believe I'm dancing with Jerry Rice.
I can't believe dancing is as hard as playing wide receiver.
Tango.
I'm sorry.
You okay?
Yeah. How do you manage all the aches and pain?
Tiger Balm.
Really?
Tiger Balm works fast and lasts a long time.
Samba.
Whoa. Sorry, I'm such a klutz.
Maybe we should stop.
No, just get me some Tiger Balm.
You sure?
Just get me the Tiger Balm.
If you suffer from aches and pains, go for the balm. Tiger Balm. Now in a convenient, easy-to-apply patch. At drugstores, mass discount stores, supermarkets, and health food stores everywhere.
Welcome back to the Sports Beat with me, Dan Stevens, and we've got Nancy on a car phone.
Dan, I just missed a turn. Now should I take a right or a left here?
You know this is Sports Beat, don't you?
To easily get back on track when you miss a turn, you want to ask TomTom, not Dan.
Turn left.
TomTom Go is your portable, everyday GPS solution. Grab it and go. Just tap the screen and a helpful voice guides you where you're going.
You have reached your destination.
TomTom Go. Find your way the easy way. Learn more at TomTom.com.
NASA announces ambitious plans to return to the moon and stay there. CBS News correspondent Peter King has the story.
NASA hopes to return to the moon by 2020, not just for short trips.
We're going
to
go after a lunar base.
Exploration chief and former astronaut Scott Horowitz says the first missions will be just for a few days. They'll evolve into a permanent presence. He says the North and South Pole seem to be the most interesting spots for a lunar base.
Because of continual sunlight, because of the ability to maybe get after materials on the moon.
Like hydrogen and oxygen. The agency is hoping for international and commercial interest for the pay-as-you-go exploration program. Peter King, CBS News.
James Everett officials say literally nickel and dime the University of Tennessee out of $20,000. Everett worked at the university for 19 years, emptying coins from vending and copying machines. Recently, officials started wondering where all the money went. They questioned Everett and then fired him. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
New Michelin tires on sale from Sears, along with family, friends, and rum balls. Something to be thankful for. With new tires, you can drive to the store to buy the forgotten can of cranberry and the extra batteries. You can go to find the last-minute gift for that last-minute nephew who shows up late with his roommate. With Michelin tires, the holidays just seem brighter.
Get the lowest price of the year on Michelin tires, only at Sears Auto Center. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 12/24/06.
You're on the Ovaltine Nutrition Hotline with nutritionist Felicia Stoller.
Felicia, I know that flavoring milk is a good way to get my kids to drink more milk, but is there a difference in chocolate milk flavorings?
There really is. Compare the nutrition in rich chocolate Ovaltine to Nesquik powder and see the difference. Ovaltine contains over twice as many vitamins and minerals as Nesquik, so Ovaltine's more nutritious. And kids love the taste of rich chocolate Ovaltine. When it comes to nutrition, Ovaltine's the better choice.
More Ovaltine, please!
It's time for the Daily Free Speech Zone here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You know the rules. Any subject, any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. Lines are open for you right now at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And to kick things off in the free speech zone today, we turn to Bob Furtick. He's an activist and a progressive. He brought us Democrats.com, ImpeachPact.org, and with colleagues, AfterDowningStreet.org. And there's always something going on. There's a new website now called MandateForPeace.org. Bob, you're busy on that web thing.
It's a lot of fun.
Nice to talk to you again. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Not too bad. Now, a lot of people are looking at the this situation in Washington where allegedly the president is open to new ideas, and Stephen Hadley said yesterday that it'll be weeks, not months, before we have a new path forward in Iraq, whatever that means. And we see that while the message from the election was pretty clear, that a lot of people went to the polls to express their dissatisfaction with this administration's policy on Iraq, we see things kind of waffling a little bit. Some of the Democratic leaders don't appear to be as outspoken about these issues as they were even a few weeks back. Tell us about the mandate for peace and what you're asking activists to do over the next 24, 36 hours.
Well, the election was a mandate for getting out of Iraq, and the Democrats that are running Congress are cautiously circling the question of how to go about doing it. And we're asking everybody to call their representatives, 202-224-3121, and just tell them to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq now. We have to give them a simple message that we're not going to sacrifice more of our young men and women. We're not going to sacrifice more of our tax dollars, that the fiasco has to end and has to end now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that is a very clear message, and I agree with you. It needs to be heard, and it needs to be repeated.
Yes, we need lots of people to call. We know from the polls that an overwhelming majority of Americans are fed up with the lies that got us into this war and the deaths that have resulted. So we all took to the streets by the millions to prevent the war, and now those millions of us who opposed the war and the millions more who've figured out what we knew going in need to speak out. They need to hear from us in Congress. We can't let this debate be dictated by the pundits and by the armchair generals. We need the people to be heard.
Yeah. Well, and this is also timed to jibe with the release of the Iraq Study Group, the Baker-Hamilton Commission report. And it's clear that, kind of like the 9/11 Commission, this will be bipartisan and will have a veneer of credibility. But the president's made it clear in comments last week on the way back from Jordan that, you know, this is just one input.
Yeah, well, at least he didn't call them a focus group, which is what he called us when millions of us were protesting in the street. But he doesn't respect Jim Baker. He doesn't respect Lee Hamilton. He's always done things his way. And it's his way or the highway, and he's made it clear that he's not going to pull U.S. troops out of Iraq as long as he's in the White House. So either Congress has to do it for him by cutting off the funding immediately, or we have to impeach George Bush and get him out of the White House and put somebody else in who will bring the troops home.
Mm-hmm. And Bob Furtick, what was the final score for ImpeachPact.org this year? How many of the candidates you supported got elected?
Well, we're counting our moral victories. We did elect Keith Ellison, who's the first Muslim American from Minnesota, and he supports impeachment, and we're going to be working with him in the weeks and months to come. The rest of the candidates, we support about 20 other candidates, and we're claiming moral victories because they put the impeachment issue on the map, but these were uphill races, and the Democratic Party establishment refused to help any candidates who supported impeachment. So we were really at odds with the party. Next time around, we're gonna take it to the party more directly.
Uh-huh. Well, I think the moral victory is something that shouldn't be understated. Tom Hayden was on our program last week following up on an op-ed piece he wrote, pointing out how the peace movement in this country, while after the war started, it hasn't produced the kind of mass mobilizations that many of us had hoped for. It still has had a dramatic and measurable impact. And while, again, we don't necessarily have millions on the streets, we have millions of people on their computers, they're blogging, they're emailing, they're learning and expressing themselves. And despite the obstacles of a compliant corporate media, a lot of people have had their awareness expanded by the efforts of people like you.
Yeah, I don't think we should underestimate what we accomplished on Election Day, what we were up against. George Bush got on Air Force One and flew all over the country at our expense. There was a tremendous amount of money, Republican money. The corporate media gave untold millions in in-kind contributions when they only told the Republican side of the story. It was an amazing victory that we were able to elect Democratic majorities in the House and the Senate, and that shows you that people are really quite angry. They're really quite determined to change what's going on in Washington. It's going to continue to be a struggle as long as the corporate media continues to only tell the Republican point of view. But we do have the Internet. We do have radio shows like yours where people can learn and make up their own minds. And we have the ability to connect by email with millions of our people who think like we do. And we've just got to keep on marching and keep setting goals like impeachment, like getting out of Iraq, and keep fighting for those goals until we win.
Yeah. Well, Bob, you set a great example. I thank you very much. I want to direct people again to the website mandateforpeace.org. And the switchboards are probably closed in Washington tonight. But you can call 202-224-3121 tomorrow. Ask to be connected to the office of your representative or somebody else's and pass along the message that we want peace, we want out of Iraq now, and make it a very concise and simple message that's more likely to be heard. Bob Furtick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And thanks for your work.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. 888-5 Peter B. The rest of this hour, wide open for your phone calls, so grab a line now. We can talk about John Bolton's impending departure from the United Nations. Hoorah! There's a minor bit of satisfaction there. Of course, we have to now hold our breath and say, well, what kind of Neanderthal will Bush replace Bolton with? But we can talk about that. We can talk about the Mexico situation. We can talk about the Supreme Court's oral arguments on desegregation methods and anything else that's on your mind, including the media coverage of events last week. One other thing that I'd like to throw out there comes from a recent personal experience. Over the weekend, I was in Monterey and Carmel, and I had a great time, saw a lot of my radio friends, and I want to thank the folks at the United Nations Association for a great event on Saturday. I really enjoyed meeting all the folks and found people very receptive. And after that, Kathy and I went down the road to Carmel to do a little shopping and get into the Christmas season thing. And I didn't buy anything, but did a lot of window shopping. Anyway, I went into the Sharper Image and sat down in one of those electric massage chair gizmos. And I was relaxing in there, and that machine was working me over pretty damn well. Not quite a human massage, but something along those lines. And about 4 hours later, I realized that my cell phone was missing. Retraced my steps, and then I just started calling my cell phone. Until finally, the next morning, somebody answered. And it was a fine fellow at the Sharper Image in Carmel, and my phone had fallen out of my jacket pocket while I was enjoying the mechanical massage. And I was a little concerned because last week I read in the San Francisco Chronicle a great piece by David Lazarus, one of the business writers, about what happens when you lose or have your cell phone stolen. And I was shocked to learn that we are on the hook for calls that are made when a cell phone is out of our possession, even after we've notified the cell phone company. Take, for example, Rich Soskal. He lives in Alameda, California. T-Mobile is his carrier. His phone was lost or stolen. He reported it to T-Mobile. And nonetheless, they sent him a bill later that month for $600 in charges for calls to Columbia that were made during a 24-hour period after his cell phone went missing. And if you accidentally leave your phone somewhere, somebody makes thousands of dollars in calls. According to Jeff Brown of the California Public Utilities Commission, basically, you're screwed. Now, I tried to call my cell phone carrier Saturday when I noticed the phone was missing, and after pressing 6 about 16 times, they notified me that the office was closed and I could call on Monday. And I just imagined how much damage could be done on my cell phone in the hands of the wrong person in that, 36 or 40-hour period. So I want you to be aware of that. And if you have any sob stories, if you've lost or had your cell phone stolen and you had to pay charges like that, I would like to hear from you. I think somebody ought to fix that. Because after all, when my credit card is stolen, the bank will waive the charges. I had a checkbook stolen. A guy was writing hot checks. The bank reimbursed me for the money. 888-5-PETER-B. You can comment on any issue from any viewpoint. Get on the line now, and we'll talk about it the rest of this hour. 888 888- 573-8372. Just don't call me on a stolen cell phone, all right? I don't want to be a conspirator with you. 888-573-8372 puts you through to the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
The Monterey Peninsula College Holiday Jewelry Sale is here, starting Tuesday, December 5th through the 7th. It's your chance to buy gorgeous, one-of-a-kind silver and metal jewelry pieces, plus fabulous metal art, also handmade ceramics, over 20 of our most talented artists, with affordable, delicious jewelry. This sale is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, December 5th, 6th, and 7th. Open all day till 7 p.m. at Monterey Peninsula College, 980 Fremont in Monterey. Follow the signs for parking. Don't miss it.
Pam and Nancy from the Potting Shed in Aptos on the Christmas season.
We have the tree, we have refreshments. It's turned out to be a really big season for us.
Someone was in the other day who was telling their companion who had been there for the first time that, oh, and they also do Christmas, and you should see it with all the lights. It's just beautiful. So.
It's one of the prettiest times of the year.
Yeah. Christmas is fun. I mean, we start the kickoff with the, for the season, the first weekend in November with an open house, and we have homemade refreshments. In December, we have a live green wreath workshop where people can come and make their own green wreaths.
Call us at 685-1626, and we keep lists of anyone who's interested in the classes and schedule them accordingly. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard in Aptos.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn. If you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find. The Potting Shed.
Gifts for gardeners and everyone. We're hard to find, but it's worth it.
The days of wine and roses.
12-step talk uncensored.
Laugh and run away.
Saturdays, 4 to 5 p.m.
Like a child.
12-step talk uncensored. It's about time.
Through a meadowland toward a closing.
Let's check your drive in and around the Monterey Bay area. We're kind of winding down the afternoon drive, but still some problems in Watsonville. Northbound Highway 1 at Riverside Drive. This crash from a while ago, still off onto the shoulder. It was a major injury wreck. The traffic is heavy in both directions. Also in Monterey, southbound side of Highway 1 at Moonrose Avenue, an accident there with five vehicles now off onto the right shoulder. Capitola checking in. Little improvement here. Southbound 1 after Bay Avenue, the three-vehicle wreck here has been cleared now into the center divide. When we have to move these vehicles to the shoulder, there may be a traffic break, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. Also, a stall in Capitola, southbound Highway 1 at 41st Avenue. Left lane is partially blocked. This report brought to you by iRobot. You have enough to do this holiday season. Let iRobot Scuba and iRobot Roomba wash and vacuum your floor so you don't have to. Robots make the perfect gift. Shop iRobot.com and save. I'm Alex Daly with traffic on KRXA 540.
We continue now in the free speech zone on the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm lucky. I lost my cell phone, but somebody found it. And presumably it doesn't have a bunch of extra long-distance charges on it when I get it back. Now this. The FBI appears to have begun using a novel form of electronic surveillance in criminal investigations, remotely activating a mobile phone's microphone and using it to eavesdrop.
Me, I'm calling, baby.
Apparently, Nextel cell phones that were in the hands of some mobsters were used by the FBI to listen in on nearby conversations. Did you know that? A special feature of Nextel phones? They're available for the FBI to utilize? 888-5 Peter B is our toll-free number. And up first, I got to check my screen here. We have Dan in Phoenix. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well today, and you?
I'm okay. I'm just curious. I don't know much about politics, but I know that, my dad was in Vietnam, CIA, two tours with all them, and then all secret stuff. I really don't know what he did after, but, he just died in June, but the only time I ever see him really cry is when that stuff happened in Iraq, right?
Yeah.
And anyway, make a long story short, I remember when that thing started happening, I told him, I said, we got to go in, Dad. We got to go in, Dad. They got nukes. And my dad said, no, they don't. Where are we going to get them? He was right, obviously. But anyway,
yeah, he was.
I was wondering how come people are so insane that they don't, that we haven't even, we don't think about impeaching them? I mean, it doesn't seem like, is it just harder than it seems, or?
Well, there are a lot of factors, Dan, and I believe that Bush and Cheney deserve to be impeached. I believe that they have willfully and repeatedly violated the law, and the evidence is pretty clear. There's a great woman, a former federal prosecutor named Elizabeth de la Vega, who has just published a book, and it makes the case for accountability, whether it's through criminal process or through impeachment, for some of the top officials of the Bush administration. That said, there's a whole set of practical issues about whether impeachment would benefit the rest of us long term. And part of the problem is that if you impeach Bush, you get Cheney.
Yeah, my mom said.
If you try to impeach Cheney first, then we do have a Democratic Senate, and a replacement vice president would have to be confirmed by that Senate.
Mm-hmm.
But the president would appoint, and we don't know who exactly we would get.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, I just don't understand why. I guess you just a lot of people don't understand. I don't understand why they would just. I mean, I was in 82nd Airborne Division in 80. I got out in 85.
Uh-huh.
I got close to some stuff. I never seen nothing like they're seeing now. But, you know, I can't believe the insanity of, trying to be saying you're a Christian and going over there and blowing them people up over there, you know.
Well, it is insane, and let's just add this to it. We claim that we had to go in because this man had WMD that represented an imminent threat to America, not just to his neighbors, but to America. And that was such a stretch. And yet, we have used cluster bombs. We have used depleted uranium munitions. We have used white phosphorus. And these are, in the latter cases, chemical or biological-type weapons. And we act as if, it's okay for us to use those tactics because we have the righteous moral high ground here. And, Dan, it's shameful. And, unfortunately, the shame falls on us just as much as it does on our wayward president. Thanks for your call today.
Thank you, sir.
Nice to talk to you. Now, Dick in Salinas. Hello, Dick. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. You were talking about the cell phones.
Yeah.
It seems these companies have little respect for their customers. So, but one thing that could limit a person's liability is to buy these,
the prepaid?
Mobile to go, yeah, where you just
uh-huh.
buy 1,000 minutes or 500 minutes, and if you lose the phone, well,
mm-hmm.
They're not going to be charging you big bills.
Well, Dick, that's a good point. I have to tell you, though, that until I read this article in the paper the other day, I was under the impression that, like so many other products, that if it's stolen and you properly report that, that from the time you report it on, you're not responsible for the misuse of your device, a telephone or, checkbook or credit card. And, when you consider that banks and credit card companies do generally hold their customers harmless from theft and fraud, the cell phone companies have carved out a whole new area of shifting responsibilities.
Well, they certainly should have to. I mean, they should take that into account. If you reported it, they ought to just cancel the phone, and it's no big.
And when you look at the volume of calls that these companies have, to stick this guy with a $600 or $700 phone bill after he reported it stolen, that's unconscionable.
Yeah.
That's not a true cost to the phone company.
That's for sure.
That's a billing matter.
That's right.
And they could wipe it away with the keystroke of a computer.
That's true. You were saying about the problems with trying to impeach Bush.
Yeah.
If it's the case that you're afraid to impeach Bush because then Cheney will become president or it's difficult to do, I mean, that didn't stop them from trying to get Clinton for deeds. But it seems like that makes the president almost immune from impeachment if you...
Well, John Nichols from The Nation has published a new book called Impeach the President, and I'll check the title during the break. Anyway, he says we have a moral obligation.
Right.
And I agree with him. He makes a great point, but I'm not able to persuade Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi that is the political course of action that is best recommended. Personally, in my gut, I want to see it happen. And I kind of say, well, the hell with the consequences. You know, it's a matter of principle.
That's right. I agree.
So I can tell you, I'm still wrestling with it. Bottom line is, I would like to see accountability pursued wherever it takes us. Dick, thanks for the call today. More of your calls coming up next. 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Hello, I'm Vince Kohler, chair of the Monterey County Democratic Party. I'd like to tell you about the perfect holiday gift for Democrats, victory shares. What's a victory share? It's a personalized certificate showing that you've made a contribution to one of the most effective Democratic organizations in the state of California. And for as little as $20, you can buy a victory share for your friend or loved one, or for yourself. Your Victory Share contribution will fund crucial activities like voter organizing and candidate development. And each Victory Share will also entitle the holder to special benefits, including gifts and invitations to events. In the November election, the Monterey County Democrats made a critical difference in the victories of Democratic values, candidates, and causes. We're now working on success in election 2008. What better gift than a share in that victory? A Victory Share. You can buy Victory Shares online now at MontereyCountyDemocrats.org. That's MontereyCountyDemocrats.org. Paid for by the Monterey County Democratic Central Committee.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. We're in the free speech zone where your calls and comments are welcome. When you call in, Matt Renner answers the phone and asks you what you want to talk about. But he will not censor your remarks or tell you, oh, no, you can't talk about that. So grab a line now and chat with us, 888-5-PETER-B. I've got lines available, 888-573-8372. And yes, John Bolton will not be with us much longer. His recess appointment about to expire. He submitted his resignation because the White House could not come up with another end run to keep him in the post there as the ambassador to the United Nations. And Matt dug out this archive beauty of John Bolton, the man who loves the United Nations so much. Take a listen.
There is no United Nations. There is an international community that occasionally can be led by the only real power left in the world, and that's the United States, when it suits our interests. And when we can get others to go along. Secretariat building in New York has 38 stories. If you lost 10 stories today, it would make a bit of difference. The United States makes the UN work when it wants it to work. And that is exactly the way it should be, because the only question for the United States is what's in our national interest. And if you don't like that, I'm sorry, but that is the fact.
No, I don't like that. And this is just a rich example of what John Bolton considers to be diplomacy and international consensus building. The guy has been a one-man wrecking ball at the United Nations. And while the supporters can point to a couple of things that he's done, for example, trying to keep nations that don't honor human rights from serving on the United Nations Human Rights Committees or Council, the overwhelming report card on John Bolton is that he has been a failure and that he has succeeded in alienating many nations and their diplomats during his tenure at the United Nations. Farewell, John Bolton. We won't miss you. Now we go to the phones, and we go to Arizona, where Randall's on the line in Phoenix. Hi, Randall.
Hey, Peter, how's it going?
Doing okay today. How about you?
Oh, I just can't complain. Hey, I tuned in the middle of David McMichael, and it rang this huge gong. It not just rang a bell, but all my notes from Iran-Contra are in storage. Could you refresh me? Was he like a CIA analyst who blew the whistle on stuff?
He was working at the CIA. I do not know that McMichael blew the whistle.
I seem to remember him being one of our heroes. Actually, was one of the honest people that that told the truth about what was going on with a lot of stuff.
Well, maybe others have a better memory, but I was paying attention during Iran-Contra, but I can't say that I recall his participation there.
Well, all these names are making me so nostalgic for the 80s. You know, Robert Gates and of course John Negroponte, Death Squad John, and Robert the Mad Bomber Gates are still around, and not to mention Elliot the Liar Abrams and everybody else. It's just like the like John Gotti took over, I guess, the Gambino crime family. Well,
yeah.
You know, the Bushes have taken over the Reagan crime family, and it's the same old crime family. So on the eternal vigilance beat, one of the issues we're going to have to watch for is imperialism in Latin America, which is you can start to hear the drums pounding with the anti-Chavez propaganda and the anti-Evo Morales propaganda. Now Daniel Ortega got elected in Nicaragua. And
well,
it's going to be like old home week again, it seems like.
Okay, but I see progress on those fronts because Hugo Chavez was reelected by 61 to 38% of the vote. Rosales, his competitor, was supported by the United States pretty overtly. And what's really interesting is that the polling firm of Penn Schoen, and I can't remember the other guy's name, who served the Clinton administration, they were Bill's personal pollsters throughout his two terms, they supported Rosales. They were working to use Western-style market research and marketing techniques to help him overcome the obvious advantage of Hugo Chavez.
Yeah.
And I only learned today that some people who I know, not well, but they are pollsters here in the San Francisco Bay Area, Evans McDonough, they did the polling for Hugo Chavez. So it's very interesting to see, you know, the U.S. Participation in the free election in in Venezuela.
It's and a consultantocracy. They have their fingers all over the world. And we've exported them before. I think Mr. Carville Madeline himself was involved in, was it Bolivia or Ecuador? One of those elections, and they got beaten badly.
Mm-hmm.
Our consultants got beaten by, you know, the will of the people.
Yeah. And, all right, Randall, thanks a lot.
Oh, it's Sequoia, by the way. It's owned by a series of shell corporations through the Netherlands Antilles,
mm-hmm.
and the corporation is called Smartmatic, and it's based in Venezuela.
You are correct. Thanks for refreshing my memory on that. 888-5-PETER-B. I've got a couple of lines open if you want to join the conversation here. Now to Christine in Phoenix. Hello, you're on the air. Hi, Christine.
How are you?
I'm well today, and you?
I'm much better knowing that Bolton is going.
Isn't that nice?
I am so happy about that. I was really TO'd when he appointed him. Congress was in recess, and he just took it upon himself to do that, and I was like, ooh.
Well, and what's interesting here is that it was a Republican named Lugar and a Republican named Chafee who sent the signal.
Is that Lincoln Chafee?
Lincoln Chafee was defeated as senator from Rhode Island.
I know. I was a little upset about that.
And but he's a Republican, okay?
Well, yeah, but he was one of the, well, I hate to say better, but.
You're right.
You know, he was decent, I'm thinking. He wasn't totally, brainwashed or.
Well, he had a streak of independence, and he did vote against the administration on many key issues. But he accepted their support for reelection, and they kind of mutually held their noses, hoping to hold on to that seat and the Republican control of the Senate. At any rate, it really was Chafee who sent the signal, even after he was defeated, that he could not roll over and support confirmation of Bolton.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't know that.
Because, you know, in the current context, we'd love to see that Democratic leadership made this happen. But, in fact, it was Republicans like Lugar and Chafee who bucked the White House, and ultimately the White House had to accept it.
So now, when does his term end? It ends pretty quick, doesn't it? The end of January?
You know what? I haven't seen when the resignation is effective. He cannot serve beyond January 4th because that's when the new Congress begins its session.
Woo-hoo!
And so he must be out of office by then.
Well, gosh, that's good news. Hey, I wanted to ask you, have you heard anything else about the Diebold machines, the voting, and all of the problems that seem to be happening with that?
Well, Christine, we talk about those every Friday during the last hour of our program, which is 6 to 7 p.m. in Phoenix.
Okay. Well, I'm a new listener. I just found you. So.
Great. Well, every Friday, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com joins us and updates us on the latest problems with the voting machines and some of the critical issues related to that.
Cool. Well, that's good to know. So Friday afternoons.
That's right.
Excellent.
Now, Christine, can I make you a vice president of marketing for the Peter B. Collins Show?
Sure.
You seem enthusiastic. You know how to call in. I mean, those are fundamentals. Can you email 10 of your friends in the next 24 hours and tell them you've discovered the Peter B. Collins Show and they ought to try it, too?
And you're on this regular time every day?
Yes, 4 to 7 p.m. in Phoenix on KPHX, 1480.
Yes. Air America.
All right.
So glad y'all are back. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Christine.
All right, have a great day.
Okay, 888-5-PETER-B. Lines available if you'd like to join us. Now to John in Carmel Valley. Hey, John.
Peter, I unfortunately didn't hear your talk Saturday, but I talked to a friend who did,
and she'd like to hear it again, and I would like to hear it for the first time. So what are the chances of you broadcasting your talk on your station?
Well, it's not going to be on the radio, but Hebbard, whose last name escapes me right now, videotaped it, and it will be on public access. I think that's 20 or 26 in Monterey, Wednesday this week. I don't know the time.
Okay.
So you might check on your cable access channel and see if the schedule is there. And I'm going to try to get somebody to record it, because then I'll have a copy.
I just want to say one thing to the listeners. Go out and look at that incredible full moon as it rises. It's about as high as it's going to get. It might get a little higher at the end of the month when it's up again, but in the winter there's nothing like a full moon, and it's looking pretty good tonight.
Yeah, well, we had a great time in Monterey and Carmel this weekend. Took a walk along the waterfront there in Pacific Grove on Saturday morning. And, yeah, the weather right now and the clarity of the sky and that full moon, it's quite a combination, isn't it?
Winter has its bad sides, but in my opinion, the low angle of the sun makes the most beautiful light of the year, especially in California. You might not be able to say that where in northern winters there's so much overcast. The trouble with northern latitudes isn't just the cold, but because evaporation is so far down, there's so much overcast, and you miss some of the most beautiful light. But even there, when it's clear, that especially low angle, to me, it's photographers notice it, but if you're a nature person and you're out, the winter has the best light for purity, for contrast. Summer light is high sun, direct light, and it's very different, not only in the power it has, obviously, but the whole aesthetics of it is totally different.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of that.
That's okay.
Very removed from politics.
Yeah, thank you, John.
Yeah, bye-bye.
All right, I always appreciate your calls. 888-5-PETER-B is our toll-free number. The switchboard's wide open right now. And I like to tell you that because in talk radio we're not supposed to, you know, we kind of just play a game here that the lines are always jammed to the max. But I like to tell you when the switchboard is wide open, because I know that there are people hanging back saying, you know, I'd call in, but he's going to put me on hold, and then there'll be three or four people in front of me, and by the time he gets to me, I will have forgotten what I called about. Well, it'll be a short wait if you're one of the first two or three people who call me right now at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And just one more note about cell phones. I told you how I lost mine and how this guy quoted in the newspaper had lost his cell phone and $600 or $700 worth of calls were made on it even after he reported it missing, and he had to pay that tab. And then this came into my email today, that the FBI has figured out how to use cell phones to conduct eavesdropping. And the U.S. Commerce Department Security Office warns that a cellular telephone can be turned into a microphone and transmitter for the purpose of listening to conversations in the vicinity of the phone. An article in the Financial Times last year said mobile providers can remotely install a piece of software onto any handset without the owner's knowledge, which will activate the microphone even when its owner is not making a call. Makes you feel secure. That way, when Al-Qaeda is calling, you're going to know about it, Bush is going to know about it, and the FBI will be able to listen without your knowledge. We'll take a quick break and return for more of your phone calls. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, or email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. KRXA 540. Progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Every Sunday morning at 10, listen to Rock Roller Real Estate, the number one Sunday morning Bay Area real estate show is now on KRXA 540. If you want to learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling high-end homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are, this is the show for you. Rock Rollin' Real Estate, the Bay Area's number one Sunday morning real estate show, now covering the Central Coast. For more information on how to become a guest, call 408-892-3376. Rock Rollin' Real Estate.
Tired of that dreaded drive into town for fresh quality produce? The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village has the perfect solution to your problem. Owners Ed Drobnik and Don Bikey have over 50 years of combined experience in the produce business and are passing the substantial savings on to their customers. The Produce Barn offers a wide selection of conventional and certified organic seasonal fresh fruits and vegetables. We also carry a fine selection of specialty candies and snacks, exquisite gourmet gift items, and feature Freedom Meats, savory sausages, bacon, and marinated fresh meats. Heck, we even throw in free recipes. So, whether you're a restaurant, lodge, home chef, or treasured village visitor, stop by the Produce Barn at 13750A Center Street in the Center Street Plaza, behind Wells Fargo and right next to the Chatterbox. We're open 7 days a week.
The Produce Barn in Carmel Valley Village, 659-5916. That's 659-5916. The Produce Barn.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Let's take a look at your drive home in and around the Monterey Bay area. Ogs and guilty Gilroy this time around. Southbound 101 just getting word now of a crash at Monterey Street. The accident here involves a vehicle that hit the center divide and it is blocking the left-hand lane. CHP not yet on the scene, so be mindful of that. Meanwhile, in Watsonville, traffic is improving. Northbound Highway 1 at Riverside Drive, a major injury crash from a couple of hours ago, has been cleared, but traffic is still very heavy actually in both directions. Let's also go to Highway 1 in Monterey, southbound side at Moonrose Avenue. An accident here with five vehicles that have been cleared to the right shoulder. Now, tow trucks are on the scene now, many of them, so that's causing some slow traffic due to curiosity. This look at traffic this time around is brought to you by Advil Cold and Sinus. Advil Cold and Sinus with all the power of Advil plus a hard-working decongestant. Powerful cold and sinus relief now available at your pharmacy counter. I'm Alex Daly with traffic on KRXA 540.
Show. You feeling a little warmer or a little colder? Seen a wacky snowstorm?
Well, there's a little something that's been freaking me. I read it in the news, I seen it on TV. It haunts me in the night and creeps me in the morning. A spooky little thing called global warming. It seems our indispensable amenities, like hairspray, air conditioners, and SUVs, are causing big emissions, all of which are forming a spooky little thing called global warming. Fluorofluorocarbon strip away ozone. They can't seem to leave the rainforest alone. Our temperatures are rising and they've now deduced the vampires of progress have come on to rules.
Absolutely. We continue with your phone calls here on the PBC show, and John in Phoenix, you're next. Hello, John.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing okay, thank you.
Oh, I'm not surprised about the Nextel cell phone. I'm sure it's capable of being done on all cell phones. And years ago, a friend of mine used to work for the phone company, and he says all the phone company had to do was flip a switch, and your own phone, even with their receiver on the hook, turn it into a microphone that could hear whatever's going on in the room.
I'm not so sure about that, not the old phones, because...
No, this guy, I mean, he told me this like 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah? Well...
this is your landline, not your cell phone.
Right. I've actually done a little, black bag work, and in order to get a telephone like that to actually work as an eavesdropping device, you could use the wires, but you had to put in a separate microphone and amplifier. Because the, an old POTS, a plain old telephone service device, it just didn't have the electronics to make that possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now, newer phones, I think it is more possible. Because, they don't require as much amplification to send a signal out.
Oh, I see.
But, yeah, there have always been ways, and I just think that people are pretty casual about their cell phones. I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never really been – I've only lost this phone once on Saturday. But I've never worried about it too much because I figure, okay, if I lose it, you know, don't give me another one. And I want to get rid of this one anyway because my contract is finally up and I'm free.
Oh, not me. I lost my cell phone one time and I went into a state of panic. I couldn't wait till I got to a phone call. My cell phone company say, cancel my account. I lost it. Cancel it right away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was worried about people picking it up and start making phone calls. God only knows where.
Well, I made an urgent call to my cell phone company, but they didn't think it was so urgent. They said I could call back on Monday.
Well, mine was pretty good. So, anyway, the only thing I wanted to mention is last night when I went to see demolition at Phoenix College because I heard about it on the KPHX here in town.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't going to go because I figured, well, I don't know if I'm going to have time or not. So after church, I decided to go get something to eat and then go see it. And I'm so glad that I did. It is just absolutely fantastic. It just reconfirms what I've thought all along, that the towers and Building 7 was just planned demolition.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing nice about this documentary is the fact they're not blaming anybody or putting the blame on anybody. They just ask the questions,
right,
and then go and find the evidence to answer the questions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing documentary, and I urge everybody to go see it. And it's a matter of fact, this is the first part of three movies that she's going to be making. Of course, this one's called Demolition. The second one's going to be called Terrorists and Hijacking.
Mm-hmm.
And what the third one's going to be, I don't know.
Yeah.
But,
well, my bottom line is that we weren't told the truth. And Matt, my producer today, was just repeatedly reviewing an alleged newly available video that is claimed to support the notion that a plane flew into the Pentagon. And I won't bore you with trying to describe a picture on the radio, but I'll just say this, that in the frame of reference, the object that flies into the Pentagon is smaller than a tractor-trailer rig that is seen in the same, general vicinity in this picture. And they want us to believe that that is a 767 called Flight 77. If they ever give me the evidence that proves that a plane flew into the Pentagon, I'll be the first to admit it. But to date, I haven't seen that evidence. Thank you, John. Now we go to line two. It's Helen in Santa Cruz. Hello, Helen.
Hi, Peter B.
How you doing?
I'm good. I'm calling you from the Monterey station,
uh-huh.
KRXA.
Great.
I just want to comment on the guy who called a couple times ago about the full moon because I was outside putting my garden tools away. I looked up at the moon, and then when he said about the light was so much better in the winter, and I've been complaining for a long time because the sun is always in my eyes in the winter,
mm-hmm.
You know, because of the angle. So anyway, I'm never going to complain about that again.
I don't need sunglasses as much in the winter.
Right. And then, you know, right around September, the light changes. But I always was complaining about that. And,
mm-hmm.
like, he sort of set me straight.
Yeah. It's a beautiful night tonight, so
yeah.
Enjoy it. There's a storm front coming in at the end of this week. So.
Oh, well.
We'll enjoy it while we can.
We can't have everything.
Yeah. Thank you, Helen.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Richard, line three is Chris in Salinas. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Peter. Hey, I just wanted to bring your attention, unless you already know, about Nancy Pelosi's newfound DLC ways. She's pulling a caucus together for the new House members, and it's going to be a single person, Robert Rubin, the former Treasury Secretary, I guess, from under Clinton.
Yep.
And she's not including anybody else, even though labor leaders asked to sit in on this caucus. So I just
Explanation offered, and I'm not saying that I buy it, but the explanation offered is that Rubin is going to talk exclusively about fiscal responsibility.
Yeah. Did you read the article then?
I did, yeah. So let's wait and see. I agree. I would rather see the briefings of particularly the new members be more broad-based. And I have never been a big fan of Rubin and the policies that he was responsible for during his era of the Clinton administration.
Well, he's a Citigroup executive now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's...
I think I'm losing you there, Chris. Thank you very much. Richard in Phoenix, thanks for your call. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for your show. I really enjoy your sane and thoughtful position on issues.
Well, thank you.
I'll
try to maintain that, but I can't guarantee it.
I wanted to ask a couple of quick questions about voting machines.
All right.
First of all, I was wondering, why can't there be a class action suit against people like Diebold that engineered a product that actually works against the common good within our society?
Not a bad idea. My guess, and I'm only guessing, is that probably the Help America Vote Act that was written by Bob Ney at the behest of Diebold protects them from that kind of legal action. I don't know that, but I suspect.
Then the second question is, has the Democratic Party come out with a position statement that gives us assurance that they will outlaw unauditable voting equipment, whatever its form?
No explicit statement, but there are members who have taken that position, and there will be new legislation introduced, Rush Holt in the House and Feinstein in the Senate. I believe they're good first steps, but as Brad Friedman and I have discussed, we need to press hard to get rid of the voting machines with or without a paper trail. Paper ballots are what we can count on. Thanks for your calls today. I'm Peter B. Collins. Let's do this again tomorrow.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey is family-owned for more than 40 years. That's why when you walk in, you're treated so well. They know what they're doing. Excellent service and great product. They have the best in high-end liquor and an excellent selection of the finest wines. It's the real deal. At Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, you can call ahead and your order will be waiting for you. They treat you like family. Open every day 9 to 9 at 19 Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits ask you to please drink responsibly.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. Exactly what happened to them and how they survived all this time is not yet clear, but there's some good news about the San Francisco family missing in the Pacific Northwest since a few days after Thanksgiving. CBS News correspondent Stephen Kaufman has the story.
Three out of four members of the James Kim family were found in a remote area of southern Oregon. Kim's wife and two daughters, ages 4 and 7 months, were rescued by a helicopter crew. Josephine County Undersheriff Brian Anderson.
A helicopter from Carson observed a female in the middle of the road waving an umbrella. Helicopter landed. We confirmed that it is Mrs. Kim and the two children.
The husband remains missing. Police say he set out on foot 2 days ago in search of help. Stephen Kaufman, CBS News.
Tough questioning today by members of the Supreme Court as they heard arguments on affirmative action. At issue, policies in Seattle and in Jefferson County, Kentucky, that aim to maintain racial balances in the schools.
I'm Heather Bosch in Seattle, where, according to the folks I talked to, the high court might have its work cut out for it.
Use race?
I don't know.
Tough one?
Yes.
I don't know.
I think there's pros and cons to it.
Patrice Bao, an African-American woman, says she benefited from a policy that helped her get into a certain Seattle high school years ago. But she adds,
I just think to start kids out with using race as a determining factor for anything is just not a good start.
Heather Bosch for CBS News, Seattle.
President Bush expanded his outreach program today, meeting at the White House with one of Iraq's leading Shiite politicians, Abdul Aziz al-Hakim.
Hakim heads Iraq's largest Shiite party, the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution in Iraq. The administration had previously disregarded the group, but in an effort to cover all the bases in Iraq's volatile political scene, the president's reaching out to all factions. Next month, he will meet with a top Sunni leader.
CBS News correspondent Peter Mayer. What did they talk about?
I told him that we're not satisfied with the pace of progress in Iraq, and that we want to continue to work with the sovereign government of Iraq to accomplish our mutual objectives.
Al-Hakim, speaking at the U.S. Institute for Peace, said U.S.-led forces need to fight harder against insurgents and Sunni extremists. Just weeks